order, if you could all find a seat or remain standing if you prefer. Wonderful. Well, I'm calling to order the April 23rd, 2019 council meeting of the City of Atascadero. And Council Member Fonzie, would you lead us in a pledge to the flag?
Please rise and join me for the pledge to the flag.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. And Kiwanis is in the house.
Yeah.
Our first order of business is a proclamation honoring Kiwanis for 50 years of service to our community. And we have many people here, not only from Kiwanis to celebrate, but many people here who want to honor you. So if I could ask Caitlin Cox from Representative Carbajal's office to come forward, Kristen Hadley from Assemblyman Cunningham's office to come forward to the podium, our 5th District Supervisor, Debbie Arnold. And I do have a certificate here from Senator Monning's office. I'm not sure we have a representative here tonight. Is there? No? All right. Well, you do have this lovely certificate from Senator Monning's office, and we'll make sure that you get that. So, Caitlin.
All right, well.
And actually, what I would like to do, let me do this first. I would like to ask the President, Mike Shaw, and President-elect Kathy Van Orman, and our Vice President, Tom O'Malley, of Kiwanis to come forward to receive these recognitions.
I'm Caitlin Cox. I'm a representative for Congressman Salud Carbajal, who asked me to come present the Certificate of Congressional Recognition to the Atascadero Kiwanis for 50 years in recognition of outstanding and invaluable service to the community. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And Kristen.
Hi, I'm Kristen Handley with Jordan Cunningham's 35th Assembly District Office, and we have a real beautiful resolution for the Kiwanis Club. Mm-hmm. And on behalf of the State Assembly, it says, resolved by Assembly Member Jordan Cunningham, that the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero be congratulated on celebration of its 50th anniversary, commended for the vital role its members have played in improving the quality of life in the Atascadero community, and extended sincere best wishes for the continued success in the future. Member Resolution Number 546, dated the 23rd of April, signed Honorable Jordan Cunningham, 35th Assembly District.
And Supervisor Arnold.
So it's really exciting to be here today, and I was thinking about this morning, leaving for work. 50 years is a long time. It's really a pleasure to be here to recognize Atascadero's Kiwanis Club. I can't imagine there's any other Kiwanis Club in the country that does as much for their community. But I'd like to read on behalf of the Board of Supervisors resolution proclaiming May 2019 as Atascadero Kiwanis Month in San Luis Obispo County. And it reads in part, whereas the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero was chartered on May 22, 1969, celebrating 50 years of service to our community. And whereas over the past half century of service, the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero has provided a positive impact on our community and citizens, demonstrated in such projects as the Centennial Bandstand at Atascadero Lake Park, a children's playground at the Echo Center, and numerous improvements to city parks and downtown infrastructure. Significant fundraising has occurred for such causes as the Boys and Girls Club of North County, Atascadero Lighthouse, Joy Park Colony Community Center, Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. Are you all remembering? Is this flashbacks along the way from this? And scholarships to local graduating seniors and more. And whereas the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero was named 2014 Organization of the Year by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby proclaim the month of May 2019 as Atascadero Kiwanis Month, and hereby call upon all residents of the City of Atascadero to render support to the members of this organization and to make themselves aware of Kiwanis International, and especially the Atascadero Kiwanis Club's half century, whose members daily are providing meaningful service to our homes, schools, and community. Congratulations.
And then I would like to ask our resident Kiwanian, Councilmember Newsom, to read our city's proclamation.
I'm very honored to be sitting here and to be doing this evening. Proclamation, May 2019, is Atascadero Kiwanis Month. Whereas Kiwanis International is one of the largest service organizations in the world, with more than 600,000 members of all ages and abilities in more than 80 nations. And whereas the members of Kiwanis Club of Atascadero are devoted to improving the world, one child, one community at a time, by seeking primacy to the human and spiritual rather than the material values of life. And whereas, in addition to improving lives, Kiwanis Club members promote the development of community leaders, positive role models, intercultural understanding and cooperation, and opportunities for fellowship, personal growth, professional development, and community service. And whereas the first Kiwanis Club started its service in Detroit, Michigan in 1915, and whereas the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero, chartered on May 22, 1969, is celebrating 50 years of service to our community. And whereas over the past half century of service, the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero has provided a positive impact on our community and citizens, demonstrated in such projects as the Centennial Bandstand at Atascadero Lake Park, a children's playground at the Echo Center, numerous improvements to city parks and downtown infrastructure. Significant fundraising has occurred for such causes as Boys and Girls Club of North County, Atascadero Lighthouse, Joy Park, Colony Community Center, Atascadero Loaves and Fishes, and scholarships to local graduating seniors, and more. And whereas the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero was named 2014 Organization of the Year by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, now, therefore, we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2019 as Atascadero Kiwanis Month, and hereby call upon all residents of the City of Atascadero to render support to the members of this organization and to make themselves aware of Kiwanis International, and especially the Atascadero Kiwanis Club's half century, whose members daily are providing meaningful service to our homes, schools, and community. And I thank you.
I think that list is enough to even make a Rotarian teary-eyed. Appreciative, he says. Well, before we come up for a picture, would you like to say anything?
Mm-hmm. Just a few, right? Is that on? Yes. Kiwanis International is an international service organization that focuses on helping children, one child and one community at a time, if that's what it takes. We've been here, we've been here in Atascadero for 50 years now. We're a service club that's 100 strong right now, and we're all primed up to go on for the next 50 years. This is a wonderful community to be a service club in because everybody is so giving, helpful, volunteers. It's just a really wonderful place to help the children, and we thank you very much for this honor.
Thank you. Well, why don't we come around and take a picture? Thank you.
Well, that'll thin the herd a little bit. Let's see.
Well, that is a great way to start our meeting. Thank you. And moving on, we do have a presentation by SlowCog for about rideshare, about commuter challenges in May 2019, including Bike to School Day, which is coming up on May 8th, and Bike to Coffee Day. Maybe we can get behind that, May 11th, and Bike to Work Day on May 17th. Not sure if Peter Williams was going to be able to be here. Wonderful if you could come to the podium.
So,
and
there was also a PowerPoint.
If you could.
Okay.
If you could turn on the microphone.
Okay.
Oh, the mic's on. They
yes.
Just want you to be a little closer to it.
Oh, I was saying that there was a PowerPoint also.
Okay, so Luke is going to set up the PowerPoint in about 2 seconds.
Okay. Great.
And could you let us know your name?
I'm Jackie Mansour.
Hi, Jackie.
I work for the Air Pollution Control District, and I'm speaking on behalf of Peter and SlowCog.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yeah. Good evening. So I'm here tonight on behalf of SlowCog, which is our regional agency responsible for transportation planning and funding. So Bike Month is almost upon us, and I'm here today to fill you in on plans for this year's commuter challenge, Bike to School Day, Bike to Coffee Day, and Bike to Work Day on May 17th. So the commuter challenges, from May 1st through Bike to Work Day on May 17th, join your workplace, department, and community in a team Bike to Work challenge. Create a team of 2 to 10 coworkers, friends, or family members, and try to get as many bike miles as possible. some details. New participants to rideshare.org starting April 17th earn double mileage for joining the club. Bike share or errand lunch bike trips count. Recreational bike trips count. Multimodal trips count. And we will announce the winner live on Facebook at 5:30 on Bike to Work Day. So if you're in it for the long haul, the Bike to Work Day Commuter Challenge is an annual all-mode, so not just bikes, year-long event. And there are five titles, which are currently held by SRAM, Planning and Building, French Hospital, the Get Outside Assessors Team, and an individual title to a guy named Mark. The formula for department and business challenge categories is the same as last year and pictured here. The team and individual challenge will be mileage-based. You can check out the challenges page at irideshare.org for more details. Any parents or teachers in the audience? You don't want to miss National Bike to School Day on Wednesday, May 8th. We have 17 schools participating this year. Shout out to Carissa Plains, Creston, San Benito, San Gabriel, Santa Rosa Academic Academy for stepping up so far. And if I did not list your school and your school is participating, email rideshare at info@rideshare.org. And you can learn more about Bike to School Day at slowsaferoutes.org. So Bike to Coffee Day, new this year. We want to help you get reacquainted with your bike in a weekend environment. So dust off your bike and grab a discounted or free cup of coffee at your local coffee joint. Thanks to Dark Nectar here in Atascadero, Mary Hill Coffee in Templeton, and Loading Chute in Creston for putting North County on the map. You can learn more at rideshare.org/coffee. And finally, Bike to Work Day, May 17th. It's by far our biggest celebration of biking in our region, and it's a simple celebration. You just bike to work. If you plan to bike to work, make sure to pledge $10 to get your exclusive 2019 Bike to Work Day t-shirt. We're also encouraging employees to order in bulk to give away to employees that bike on May 17th. And you can visit rideshare.org/store to check out the details. We have 11 Bike to Work Day breakfast stations located throughout the county this year, and we're introducing for the first time 4 evening stations to fuel your ride home. Make sure to bike by Atascadero State Hospital's entrance on your way to work and to the Sunken Gardens Bikes and Brew Fest after work for the 4 to 6 p.m. Bike to Work Day happy hour. Thanks to Visit Atascadero and Wild Fields Brewing for making this possible. So let me quickly just walk you through your Bike to Work Day experience. First, getting to work together is not only safer, it's more fun. Join Atascadero State Hospital's director and public information officer for the annual police-escorted ride from here at City Hall to Atascadero State Hospital. The rideshare team encourages bike advocates to post their own group ride opportunities at irideshare.org. Free food is obviously the most important aspect of your Bike to Work Day experience. Swing by the Cayman tent at the entrance to Atascadero State Hospital for some breakfast burritos and locally brewed coffee. Check out rideshare.org/biketoworkday for more free food options happening around the county. Great giveaways. After eating some free food, make sure to grab your Bike to Work Day fanny pack, which will be full of great things. Yep, your prediction that the 90s would return is coming true. Fanny packs are coming back in style. Your bag will also include all kinds of goodies, including a multi-tool, lights, and sunglasses. All the items are listed at rideshare.org/biketoworkday. And win the folding electric bike. You don't want to miss out on your chance to win the big $1,500 giveaway, a folding electric bike. Scan a QR code or type in the URL listed at your station for a chance to win. Complete a short form and you're entered to win. In the evening of Bike to Work Day, tune into Facebook Live at 5:30 p.m. or attend an evening station to find out if you won the electric bike or any of the other commuter challenges. Like last year, you do not have to be present to win, but the rideshare team plans to be at Bikes and Brew here in Atascadero. For those not present, you don't need a Facebook account, and the direct URL is facebook.com/rideshare. Hopefully this walkthrough has inspired you to join us on May 17th. Just a quick reminder that May is Bike Month, but Bike Month is all year long at slowshift.org, and you can submit your community events or download the calendar to discover free breakfasts, group rides, and bike-inspired events all month and all year long. If you have any questions or want to get involved, go ahead and come up and ask me. You can probably remember Rideshare's email too, info@rideshare.org. Thank you for the councils to allow me to fill you in on the upcoming events. We hope to have all of you join us in making this year's event bigger and better than ever. Any questions from the council before I take off?
I think we're good unless there's any pressing questions. All right. You have a lot of activities coming up. Thank you for coming to tell all of us about it. It's nice to see so many North County businesses participating, and you have a lot of fun things going on. So thanks for being here, Jackie.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And now we are moving on to our consent calendar. The consent calendar consists of items that are considered routine in nature, and we generally just vote on them all in one vote, unless there's a member of the council or a member of the public that wishes to pull an item for further discussion. So I will start by asking, is there a member of the council that wishes to pull an item?
Yes, I had a brief question on A5.
And so do you want to pull that, or can it be a brief question?
Well, it may be able to answer the question, Mr. DeBar might. In the staff report on this, we're adopting a list of projects for our SB1 funding, but in the cover page it says that we expect to receive $8.8 million over the next 10 years, which, of course, would average out to $880,000 a year. But for the 2 years that we've received money, as indicated in the report, we're only getting about $500,000. Do you know why that is, or is that going to ramp up at some point? It just seems to be a difference between what the clear average will be over time and what we're getting these years.
Right. So that table was the initial estimate that they gave us when the SB1 was approved. So that's a little old data, but they expect that to ramp up a little bit as commerce increases over the years.
All right. Okay, so the $8.8 million is still a valid estimate as far as you know?
As far as I know, it's just you're projecting, you know, what future revenues are, so who knows really, but, that has been upticking each year, and we hope to receive more as the years go on.
All right, thank you.
And Councilmember Fonzie, were you wishing to pull an item? No? All right. Any member from the public wishing to pull an item? Comment on anything? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
We are on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. And we're going to have Luke bring up my PowerPoint. Very cool. So I have extremely good news to report. The Charles Paddock Zoo received its AZA accreditation once again. So less than 10% of animal facilities registered with the USDA have achieved accreditation. Our zoo is one of only 233 total institutions that are accredited by AZA. And in order to be accredited, the zoo goes through a very, very, very thorough review and inspection process every 5 years to ensure that it meets the AZA extremely high standards. These are the same standards that zoos such as the San Diego Zoo, your Los Angeles zoos, your large zoos meet. Our little Charles Paddock Zoo is also expected to meet the same standards, have the same documentation, policies, and procedures in place. The accreditation process includes a careful on-site inspection team, and they come through, and they're a team of zoo and animal care professionals who observed all aspects of our operations, including animal care, keeper training, educational programs, conservation efforts, veterinary programs, safety for visitors, staff, and animals, planning documents, funding, and lots more. Our accreditation review and inspection process took place last fall. This is after we submitted a fairly large body of data and policies to them. And then Zoo Director Alan Baker and I attended the annual AZA conference last week, where we interviewed at a formal hearing of the Accreditation Commission. At the end of that hearing, we were both extremely pleased to be told by the commission that accreditation had been granted. So the AZA requires zoos and aquariums to successfully complete the rigorous process every 5 years, and we are happy to announce that we passed. Don't forget Brew at the Zoo. So the fifth annual Brew at the Zoo is this coming Saturday, April 27th, from 5:30 to 9 p.m. There'll be some really great music and entertainment by Bear Market Riot and Ricky Montillo, along with a terrific variety of food and beverages, including non-alcoholic drinks for designated drivers. We also have our new Thelma Vetter Red Panda experience for everyone to see and enjoy this year. Tickets include a commemorative beer glass, lots of craft beer, distilleries, wine, and cider tasting, plus some great live music. The beer, wine, and cider tasting is all included in the price of a ticket. All proceeds from the event benefit the zoo's ongoing education and conservation efforts. So everyone over the age of 21 should come and celebrate a fun evening in the exclusive setting at the zoo. Tickets are still on sale, and it is only available if you're 21 and older, so you may not attend if you're under 21. We have wildfire preparation on Saturday, May 4th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in the Council Chambers at City Hall. This event is to better prepare our community in the event of a wildfire. The Atascadero Fire and Emergency Services, in conjunction with SLO County Fire Safe Council, will host a wildfire preparedness event called Defend Atascadero. During the last couple of years, the state has experienced some very catastrophic wildfires, and the city of Atascadero is not immune. A wide range of topics will be covered, including how to best prepare your home to survive a wildland fire, creating defensible space, and evacuation planning. This is a self-paced format, and citizens are free to stay as long or as short a time as they desire to obtain information on how to defend their loved ones and their property. I highly encourage anyone in town to please attend that. Again, it's May 4th from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. And I know that the mayor has been working with the EVC, so if you don't mind, Mayor, I'll have you announce my next item.
I'm very pleased to announce that a Canadian-based company, Advanced Ozone Integration, is soon going to be making their headquarters here in Atascadero, which is super exciting. The company engineers and distributes state-of-the-art ozone technologies to the food industry for non-toxic methods of fighting life-threatening bacteria and improving food quality. They really find that our central location and quality of life here suits them well, and we think it suits a lot of folks well. We're really thankful to the San Luis Obispo Economic Vitality Corporation that helped the company to find capital so that they could expand and grow their business and bring jobs here to the Central Coast, and worked closely with the city to help find a location. They'll actually be up north, a little further north on El Camino Real in our commercial park zone. We're extremely excited about the news and take great pride in welcoming a new business to town, so we'll be seeing them soon. I also wanted to say about the Defend Atascadero, that is something that came out of strategic planning, and it was one of those things where, if for those of you that were there, we broke out into groups that contained council members and staff and public, and it was one of those groups of all those three types of constituencies, right? Council, staff, and public, that came up with that. And so I think that's really exciting to see that come forward, and excited what the fire department is doing and bringing that to help us all defend Atascadero and really prepare for wildfire risks. So thank you so much. And now we are on to community forum. This is the portion of the meeting that is reserved for any members of the public that are wishing to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, but which is under the jurisdiction of the City Council. So if you do wish to speak, you can come to the lectern. Our timer will be on to enlighten, to help you know when your 3 minutes are up. You have 3 minutes. A total amount of time of 30 minutes will be given for public comment, unless that is changed by the council. Any member of the public who has questions and ever needs to, get some answers, get information, can reach the city clerk's office between 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. any day at 805-470-3400 or cityclerk@atascadero.org. I want just by a quick show of hands, because there are so many people here, and I don't know how many are here for another item or left over from Kiwanis, how many of you are looking to speak at community forum? Raise it a little higher, please. All right, I'm seeing possibly more than 10. So what I'm going to ask, we've got 30 minutes and we have a lot on our agenda, and so we need to get through this. So how many of you could actually get through in a minute? Is there anybody? Okay, because what I'd like to say, if you could get through in a minute or two and we could all agree to that, then we can probably fit everyone in. Otherwise, we're going to have to cut off at some point because we're not going to have the time to do that. So how many of you could do, how many of you could get through in let's say, 2 minutes max? Anybody that's willing to do that? Okay, those of you that are willing to do 2 minutes max, I'm going to have you come to the front of the line. 2 minutes max. Yes, there was somebody over here that was looking as well, and I would have you get in line now. Let's get moving because we got 30 minutes to get through this. So if you can get through in 2 minutes or less, please come to the front of the line, and then that looks like we might be able to make our 30 minutes here.
Hi, Sinon. Margie Bauer, resident. I did come and visit the city hall and see the proposals for El Camino Real. I couldn't join in at all. I see no possible way to make two lanes, north and south, through that section when it's the only north and south corridor in town. There are other ways to go around. We have the 101, but we live here. Every time someone pulls out of a parking place, the northbound or the southbound flow has to stop. In my opinion, that's way beyond traffic calming. I think it's making residents crazy. So I hope there's other people supporting. When I came in, the people were very good and talked to me. I was surprised when they said, gee, on the third day, by the way, we haven't had that many people be against it until you. And there were four of us there with the same opinion right there. So I just think we should think very seriously. I think one lane north and south through that section only with a lot of parking. We can have speed bumps. We can do other things. Nobody should go more than 25 through there. I have all of that. But I think that the plans are not thought out all the way. I don't think that they'll work. I don't know how we prove that. That's me.
Thank you. And I think there was another gentleman that said 2 minutes. All right, let's just move it, and we'll do what we can in our 30 minutes.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, business owner, resident of Atascadero, North County. I have two issues, well, one issue tonight, which I'll get to in a minute. The other is a reminder, the canine fundraiser is Saturday from 4 to 8 at the Elks Lodge. It's where we raise funds for Atascadero Police Department's canine program. So if you're going to go to Peru in the zoo, I suggest you eat your pasta first and then go, because we can accommodate you at 4 o'clock, and there's dog shows. On a more serious note, this is a county issue, but it does affect the residents of Atascadero along with all residents in North County, and we're urging the City Council to take a unanimous proclamation or whatever against this, but it's, did you know the Atascadero County Recorder's Office will be closed permanently, is what's proposed from the County of San Luis right now. In our opinion, this was kind of underhanded and snuck through. We got wind of it. We thought it was effective June 3rd. They're now saying May 7th. We have reached out to different individuals in the county office, including our 5th District Supervisor, Debbie Arnold, who is in support of keeping the office open, but I think keeping pressure on makes a huge difference. So real quick, a year ago, the planning office in the county closed. It really doesn't affect much for Atascadero, but it does for people that don't live in Atascadero but live in the county, and that was kind of snuck by us. This time it is the county recorder's office. So if you have notices of completion, mechanics lien, releases, estate planning, marriage licenses, fictitious business statements, voter stuff, this does affect us. And it's a tragedy to have us treated like a second-class citizen to San Luis Obispo. So we are publicizing this in the papers, the news media, KSPY started it Friday night, and there's 74,000 of us that live in North County. We're urging you to call, email Tommy Gong's office, Debbie Arnold's office, John Puchong's office, including both councils of Paso and the city of Atascadero, to urge the support to keep our services open. I know what I pay in taxes, both personally and professionally, and I think those of us that pay taxes are sick of being second rate to the South County. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi. I'm a business person here in town, William Vega, 3212 El Camino Real, Concourse Direct. I want to support the CCA's electricity distribution model in the city. There's tremendous success across the state, and I think it would be a mistake not to be able to compete with Paso for additional business relocations here. Paso is supporting it, and there are other cities that are supporting it. I need to talk to you today and put you on official notice as to health and safety problems we're having with public safety on our street in front of our business between 3210 and I think it's 3222 or so. Anyway, we have a little cottage industry of small exercise and fitness companies that have moved in, not at all being run like Kennedy Club Fitness, Fit Republic, and Five Give Fitness, which is at the Vaughn Center. I think it's Fit Republic is at the old Spencer Center, and then we have Kennedy Fitness with their huge facility. These companies are coming into town, and they are conducting their training in the middle of the street, competing with motor vehicles, trucks, and cars. I've tried to address this with the individual businesses. One of them made a comment as to, hey, the other people are doing it. And then after that, I said, well, you know, someone could be harmed, I mean, could be killed. And they said, well, I went to the police department. They said if I had insurance, it was okay. So I don't know having insurance is a legitimate excuse for compromising public safety. I've discussed it with the chief. I've discussed it with the city manager. They've been very nice. There's that issue, and that has brought down, in my opinion, the integrity and the value of that commercial center. I bought there. I was the first one to purchase in 2003, have built an international company there. We are contracted to Ford Motor Company and other major U.S. Manufacturers of performance products. We get occasional visitors, and we have foreign visitors that come that are foreign clients. There is a situation here where the temporary signage has become permanent, very low budget, worn out signage. That is not right. That's not fair because it diminishes the value of my business. It is wrong for someone to externalize their business costs, internalize their profits at the expense of neighbors and public safety. And that's exactly what's happening in front of my business. It's not right. You should not be exercising in the middle of the street competing with traffic. And we have photographic evidence. Please help us resolve this.
Thank you.
And the signage. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Members of the council, Peter Burns, San Luis Obispo County. I attended the town hall last night presented by Representative Carbajal. And there was a lot of angst during that meeting about man-made climate change. And man-made climate change seems to be driving a lot of public policy, which is why I thought I'd talk about it here tonight. I have a different perspective on a lot of this. Few people mention or seem to understand the difference between climate change and man-made climate change. the political left has successfully co-opted a naturally occurring cycle of which we can do virtually nothing about and made it into a crisis. They have successfully co-opted our schools, the media, government institutions, and politicians, and have them believing that climate change is man-made. The inconvenient truth is that man-made climate change is a politically contrived crisis in order to get votes and amass political power. Gases in the atmosphere that absorb infrared radiation, thereby preventing some of the outgoing energy from running to space, returning to space, and warming the atmosphere, called greenhouse gases. And water vapor is actually the largest greenhouse gas. The greenhouse gas CO2 was first placed in the atmosphere by man at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution around 1800 AD, a little earlier in Great Britain, and a little later in the United States. 800 years before the Industrial Revolution, in approximately 1000 AD, it was so warm that northern Europeans were able to sail from Iceland around Greenland up into the Baffin Bay and Baffin Sound and establish trading and farming colonies. Approximately 250 years later, in 1250 AD, global average temperature fell by about 1 degree during the Little Ice Age. This disrupted farming and also the ability to trade, as the ice would have clogged the seas. Subsequently, these colonies were abandoned. So you have massive documented climate change that could not have been caused by mankind, as it happened 800 years before the Industrial Revolution, when carbon dioxide was first placed into the atmosphere by man. One of the most often cited proof of man-made climate change is the infamous hockey stick graph, which shows a dramatic increase in atmospheric temperature at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. What people forget to mention is that this was also the end of the Little Ice Age. And what would one expect to happen when massive amounts of ice melt and disappear? Would you not have increasing temperatures worldwide as solar radiation continued to heat the atmosphere if the ice melted? And since I only have 18 seconds left. In conclusion, the burning of fossil fuels does not cause climate change. It causes pollution, which we have and can clean up. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
I'd like to thank the council for hearing me. My name is Randall Sears. I'm a resident of Atascadero for almost 3 years, and I've been a resident of Rancho Del Bordo Mobile Estates for that same amount of time. About 9 months ago, a group of our residents got together out of concern for the rising rents that are happening throughout, not only throughout the state, but specifically in the Atascadero, and happening to our mobile home park residents. And this is, most of you are probably homeowners, maybe never rented a home. I'm a homeowner too, but I happen to rent the property. I'd like to ask the audience, how many people here live in mobile home parks where they own their homes?
If you could keep addressing your accounts.
So,
yes, thank you.
Our issue was 9 months ago, we were concerned because of all the media attention and so forth that was coming to regarding investors, out-of-state investors moving into the state, buying up these mobile home parks, and gouging the residents for the rents. And so 9 months ago when we had that meeting, one of the residents spoke up and said, I don't see why we're in such a hurry. Why are we that worried about this? We need to slow down. And in 9 months, we've had 3 rent increases. And we're now at $925 a month per lot on our rent. And the word has been that the owner is shooting at $1,200 a month for rent, which he can do because we don't have an ordinance in place to stop him from raising his rents every 90 days. And by law, he can do that every 90 days. Some of the residents had a meeting with the park owner years ago with this being an issue. And they asked him, well, it got quite heated, and they said, well, why are you doing this? And he said, because I can. So that's why we need assistance. It literally holds us hostage in our homes. Not only us, but most of the people that live in these homes, this is their life savings invested in these homes. And when they go to sell, the park rent is so high that the real estate agents shake their head. And people have a high interest in the home, and then when they ask, what is the park rent, they walk away. They say, no, I can't lock myself in for a 10-year lease for this much money, and it may increase the whole time I'm in this lease. So it's literally holding us hostage by not having an ordinance. And why does he keep doing it? Because he can't. And so we need the city council's assistance in establishing an ordinance similar to San Luis Obispo's to protect us from predatory investors. These people will age out, they'll sell these investment properties to corporations, and we'll be out of luck. It'll be too late. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. If you could hold off on the clapping just so we can kind of keep things moving. If you want to raise your hand to say you're in favor, we'd love to know that. Thank you. Come on forward.
Good evening, council persons, administrative staff of the city of Atascadero. I'm also a homeowner slash lot renter at the Villa Margarita Mobile Home Park. And I've been working...
Could you give us your name for the record?
Sorry, pardon me. My name is Clyde Snyder.
Clyde, and, thank you.
So I've been involved with this group that Karen Lavinway at Rancho de Bordo kind of got together and looking at various rent control alternative. And I took some time to look at the housing element of the city of Atascadero plan. And there's a big focus in there on senior housing. And mobile home parks are predominantly senior home parks, especially in this community. More than half, and I'm quoting a few lines from the housing element, more than half all renters in Atascadero are cost burden. 50% of very low income houses are extremely low income households. That's, I believe, below $15,000 a year. Average rents are unaffordable without overpayment, overcrowding, with households earning at the extremely low, very low, and low income levels. Now we get to the section of special housing needs, senior households. Atascadero households, 22% were headed by seniors in 2010. The number of seniors is expected to grow as the percentage of residents in the 55 to 60 four-year-old range increased by 21% in the period from 2000 to 2010. In Atascadero, about 64% of senior householders were homeowners in 2010. So mobile homeowners are kind of a mixed bag, a little bit of both. 53% of senior households earn less than $50,000 annually, with 28% earning less than $30,000 per year. If any of you saw the news today or heard, the CMS is going to be insolvent in 7 years. Medicare has 15 years before it becomes insolvent. Now, we assume there's going to be last-minute work done at the senior political level. For many of us in our park, I'd say about 30%, they live basically on their Medicare. If we have a large company come in and buy the property up and raise the rents, as is happening at Rancho de Bordo, there'll be a lot of park members that will be out of luck, that won't have any housing, they won't be eligible to move into rental housing because of income considerations. So we're asking for the city to look at a rent stabilization ordinance, and I hope we can have further communication on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name's Kelly Oliver. I also live at Rancho del Bordo. And my husband and I had our home appraised in December. On December 27th, the appraisal rate was $145,000. By February 13th, it is now at $90,000 because of the rent increase and the inability for our mobile homeowners to sell their property. Ours was not done to sell, it was done in another circumstance. And when we moved in, which was 12 years ago, our rent at that time was $604. We are now at $886. So, and our income has dropped by $30,000 due to some health issues of my husband's and his inability to be on Social Security at this time. So he is not able to receive Medicare, and so it's a substantial difference, and we just want to be able to stay there, that we bought this as our forever home. And so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening.
I think you're going to need to pull the mic down.
There you go. I'm kind of short. Thank you. Thank you very much for your courtesy. And I have some information.
And your name for the record, please.
Oh, Betty Lightfoot. Most of these people know me.
Talking the official record.
Yes.
Thanks, Betty.
I know. I have some information that I think is of interest and will enlighten you regarding our mobile home parks in Atascadero for the need of space rent stabilization. Our in-house statistician, professionally known as an IT associate specializing in databases and numbers, Kent Glucoth, has prepared two charts for the council. Each member will have a copy. The charts are very easy to understand, and I think if you take the time to check them out, you're going to find it very enlightening. The overall picture is not good. There is no place on the average income, move-in or start time versus current time where the current income isn't at least $20,000 less in our park. Where did we get this data? From individual questionnaires that were given out in in-home meetings of the residents of our park of 128 coaches. Not every resident filled out all of the questions. The surveys, so on these charts, are from the completed questions and also are averages of the numbers on the survey. We, the senior citizens in Rancho Del Bordo, are not the only residents in Atascadero with rent going up and income going down. The federal picture is just as gloomy. From the ARP Public Policy Institute 2018, the over 60 age population, OAA, appropriation for those seniors has gone down by 20%, while the population of those over 60 has gone up by approximately 50% from 2001 to 2019. That's the big picture. Am I done? Well, thank you for your time and your courtesy.
Thank you very much, and we do have your handouts up here. Next speaker, please.
Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Levenway, and I am from Rancho Del Bordo. I know you've heard a lot about the rent increases, but there's something more insidious than that that is attacking basically affordable housing in this area, in particular for those who live mobile home parks, and that's what we're talking about here, SRSO, space rent, okay? That's what we're talking about, space rent, okay? Well, here's the issue, the bigger one, and it's when owners decide to sell their park, and a corporation comes in and buys it. At the end of closing, the first thing the corporation does is raise the rent anywhere from 40 to 100%. You may have known, seen this article about Fullerton in Orange County. They're going through this right now, the seniors. They just had their park sold, and their rent has gone up $400 to $600 a month on top of what they already were. And that's sad. Many of them are... Well, you'll get to read this because this will be part of the record. You will find that those people have asked the city council to find a way to take care of this. The time to do that was before the corporation bought that mobile home park. And that's what we are concerned about. And it's not just in Fullerton. It happened in San Luis Obispo County in Los Osos. Remember a few years ago? That corporation from Chicago came in, bought them out, immediately raised the rent $500. Within 6 months, 500 more. When my husband and I went to look at it because we wondered why the mobile homes were going for $10,000 and $20,000, we sat down and said, we like that one. And then we wound up finding out that the rent was already at $1,350. And it's gone up to $2,000, and all of the seniors in that park are gone. And who owns the mobile homes now that they didn't even pay a penny for? It's the corporation that bought it. The only thing that can protect us is an RSO. And you are the only governing body that can do that for us. Any corporation can come in and buy any one of the 6 mobile home parks within the city of Atascadero. And there's no protection, zero protection for them. Now, the county of San Luis Obispo takes care of the unincorporated areas. They only raise the rent 60% of the CPI. That's reasonable. That's very reasonable, okay? They also are protected against corporations coming in and buying the mobile home parks. This is 124 different entities in the state of California that have RSOs. And they're protecting the people for affordable housing. Once someone comes in like a corporation, we're out. Remember.
Thank you.
Also,
thank you.
I have these ordinances, which I'm going to leave.
Yes, so anything you need to leave, available. Hand it to the chief, and he'll make sure it gets to us. Thank you. Next speaker.
Yes, good evening. My name is Kim Chan, and I'm here on behalf of my husband and I. My husband have injured his back, so he cannot be here. I also live in Rancho Del Bordo, Space 90. Our mobile home is a single wide, and we bought it in 2017. At the time, the rent was $789. Every year we got increase, like 3.6%, so our rent going to be $843 in this May. With this increase, it forced us to have to put the mobile home for sales. We did a lot of improvement for our mobile home, thinking that would be our place to live, but right now we have to sell them. And we find out that the new increase will be $925 for any new buyer who buy into our mobile home. And it's very hard for us because our only single wide and it's only 800 square feet. At this time, I feel very emotional because we feel trapped. We feel trapped that we cannot get out. And I wrote a letter to the new owner, the owner of the manager of the park, and he said that he just do it for the same with other space. So right now we're just afraid that we will lose this house to the owner. Because one day, when nobody can buy this, it will be his. And so I'm here. I represent for all the residents in this park. And I ask the counselor of this Atascadero to help us and to help all the residents in this park so we can live and be the community. I'm sorry, my English is my second language,
You're doing just fine.
This is all I can say. Thank you.
You're doing just fine. Thank you. Good. Thank you very much. Thank you for all who came to speak to community forum, and I will go ahead and close community forum, bring it back to the council. The thing about community forum is we are legally bound by what we can actually discuss, and most of what comes forward to us we're not actually allowed to discuss, but we'll try to address some of these things to the extent that we can. So I'll just kind of start from the top. Mr. Oslin brought up the closing of the clerk recorder's office, and I will mention that under council announcements and reports, so we'll talk about that further. We are very well aware of that and know the detriment that that could be to businesses, to the city, and to residents in North County. Mr. Vega mentioning the issues with the businesses, if staff could follow up with him with regards to the issues of the training companies and also the temporary signage. And sometimes we just need to be told about that signage, and we do want to know that, so that is something that we will follow up on. Let's see. Okay, so then regarding the mobile home issue, I want to ask the city manager, have you been having discussions with some of the residents? Is this a conversation that's been going on, or is this new to you?
I have not met with any of the residents. I have heard various council members that have had discussions over the years about mobile homes and it kicked around, but I have not met with any of the residents as of yet.
I would ask the city attorney, to what extent could we just have, I'd like maybe council member Fonzie to weigh in with her experience, if she could just maybe provide us a little bit of information of what she knows.
Well, then it becomes a discussion item and it's not on the agenda, and the purpose of it being on the agenda is so that the public
understand.
The rest of the public knows that it's going to be a discussion.
See what
topic.
He does to us?
I don't do that. The Brown Act does that.
Yes. So I think then maybe what we'd like is, Council Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, did you have a?
Well, I was just going to, I'm just going to let you finish, actually, but I was going to say something that perhaps we, you know, bring it back for a discussion or have staff spend a little time looking at it and bring it back for a discussion at another meeting in the near future.
Yeah, I think what would be good is to have staff meet with, if you maybe they were to get together a core group of representatives, you know, maybe there's three of you that you say, hey, these are the three representatives. I mean, you could all go in, but, you know, it can get a little unruly. So possibly there's something like that that you can do to get some information and see if there is something that then you would want to bring back to us. I believe Councilmember Fonzie wanted to weigh in on something.
Yes, I'll watch the city attorney, and I won't say too much, but I think it would be helpful for the council to have a copy of the information that was provided and passed around tonight. And if there's any information about ordinances for this rent stabilization, it would be helpful to see that too, and perhaps put this on a future agenda.
Do you have enough from us?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming out. We appreciate it. We, you know, I've heard from one or two of you over the years, and so to have all of you here and really saying, hey, this is becoming a bigger issue, it's important to bring it to our attention. So thank you for being here. And I know it takes time out of your day or in your evening, and I know some of you, it's the first time maybe you're speaking in public and on TV, and y'all did fantastic. So thank you.
And Mayor?
Yes.
May I ask if one or two of your representatives could reach out to me with some contact information so that I can reach out and contact you. So thank you.
Yeah, if you maybe want to write down your names and phone numbers on a piece of paper, hand that to the chief, and he will get it over to the city manager. All right. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I'd also note we do have contact information from Mrs. Lightfoot.
Yes, I do know that. Whoever the committee is going to be, just say, hey, these are the folks that want to reach out to. So it's going to be easier if we have a core group of people rather than trying to, you know, triage 20 people having a conversation. So let Rochelle know, hey, here are going to be our main contacts, and move forward. Thank you. All right. Now I've lost my place. All right, now we are on to public hearings, and this is our Title IX, Title XI Planning and Zone Text Amendments. This is our annual code update, and we are, first of all, I know that Councilmember Newsom will be recusing herself, and if you wanted to say something.
Since this is a continuation from the 4-9 meeting, I'm going to recuse myself due to conflict or potential conflict of interest.
Thank you. And this is a continuation of the last meeting that we had on April 9th. And so the items that we discussed there, we are continuing to tonight. And so tonight, while there are several zoning ordinance changes being made, we've discussed and taken input on those, so we may not have as robust a discussion as you might expect on some of those items, but really trying to keep it narrow. So I will turn this over to our Community Development Director, Mr. Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. And you kind of mentioned, I'm going to keep this a little bit brief and really just touch on the items that were of interest, really shifting a couple of the items around. And from that, I'll be happy to answer questions about the remaining zoning amendments that we had went through. But back to that April 9th discussion, our main clarification there was continuing the hearing to examine some code clarifications that really addressed outdoor storage in a couple of our commercial zones, and primarily the commercial park zone. And it primarily centered around three particular land uses. One of those was farm equipment and supplies. The other one was contract construction services, and one other. And it was that discussion really centered around the fact that those land uses typically have a large amount of outdoor storage. They're more similar to a manufacturing use or an industrial use, and that the commercial park zone is really designed for just that, professional business park, commercial park. Anyway, what we had decided to do was shift those back to an allowed use. I think staff had recommended those being a conditional category, but instead, what staff is proposing is some simple clarifications in our zoning code to really highlight when these uses do trigger a conditional use permit, when their storage does exceed amounts of 10,000 square feet. So what I'm going to show you tonight is a solution to doing that. And it really exists in our land use table, which is part of our zoning ordinance in our municipal code. And what it would do is just separate the row and a table to clarify use permit trigger for outdoor sales or storage. And this would be the same for all of those land uses. Here we have the example, which is farm equipment and supplies, which is an allowed use currently today in those zoning districts and is proposed to be with this zone code text change update to continue to be an allowed use. However, if that land use does have a larger outdoor storage area, and right now that threshold is 10,000 square feet, it would trigger that conditional use permit review to ensure that that outdoor storage is located properly on site, screened properly on site, and that we bring it into a planning commission atmosphere to make sure that site is going to be designed properly. Additionally, what I'd like to add is we did receive some comments from a land use attorney, Sophie Trader, who's looked at our code and suggested some edits. And really, primarily what those edits really are is clarifications that can happen in formatting. And what we've done is we've taken a really good look at what our zoning handbook is. And our zoning handbook is really an interpretive code section. It really interprets what our municipal code has and puts it into a really user-friendly format that's easy to locate, easy to find things. And staff has some solutions to reorganizing some of the things in our handbook that don't actually trigger municipal code amendments, but just make it easier to find some of these things. We're going to be doing some cleanup on that handbook, but it's not actually amending anything in the municipal code at all. Back to the other list of proposed amendments, I'm not going to go through all of these. These are what we discussed on the April 9th hearing, but I'd be happy to answer questions on any of those seven items, which we had gone through in great detail at our last hearing. But as this is a continuation of those items, we still need to just touch on what those items were, which is the animal density for the youth projects, the mobile food vending, again, the commercial use table, which I just discussed, our notification and lot posting requirements, minimum lot sizes in our commercial zoning districts, and some terminology for our condominium map process. As always, we do need to address the environmental determination. In this particular case, we do find that these are exempt by general exemption, do not trigger environmental review. We do have findings for you tonight, our typical findings that we would adopt for any zoning code text update. And then again, the recommendation here is to adopt the amendments as proposed by staff. Again, this update tonight does include their clarification of putting those three land uses back into the allowed use category, but again, a clarification in municipal code to put those on a separate line so that we understand that those uses over 10,000 square feet will always trigger a conditional use permit. And that would pertain to any commercial use that has a storage use, not just those particular ones. As an option, there is an alternative in your staff report tonight that could adjust that outdoor storage amount, and that's just for your pleasure as you like. With that, I'm going to conclude my review and be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. I want to start by disclosing ex parte. Ex parte is all of us telling you if we've had a conversation with anyone outside of this meeting that may affect how we vote on this matter. So I will start with my right to my left.
I received the email message that I believe went out to all members of the council from Ms. Teeter.
I also received those emails, otherwise no ex parte.
Same with me.
As well, I mean, I mentioned previous ex parte things. I don't think we need to reiterate those. Conversations I had last time with an affected business owner. But no, since then, just the email.
Thank you. So let's start with any questions of staff. I'll look to the lights. Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that there's going to be handbook changes that will clarify some of these issues that were brought up at the last meeting. And I wanted to be very certain that the terms were defined clearly, that it says the changes were made to farm equipment and supplies, horticultural specialties, building materials and hardware, and contract construction services. So if I came into the counter and I was thinking of leasing land in that particular area that's zoned CPK, and you told me it was contract construction services that I was seeking, would there be a definition of that in the handbook? Because just reading those words doesn't really say what it is.
Absolutely. And we have a definition today in our handbook for those four land uses that you mentioned, and we plan to have that again in our future update to the handbook. And in fact, what we're going to do is move that forward. We're going to create one table that has all of the land uses in it, and immediately followed by all of our definitions. Right now, we have both those items in here, but the format of them and the order of them is a little more difficult to find than I think we'd like to see.
Very good. So I think what we saw last time was there was confusion on the terminology in particular, and so defining them would be very important.
Absolutely.
And I also questioned about the parking and storage requirements. There was some discussion at the last meeting about vehicles that were part of a motor pool and were driven out every day, and others that were parked and stored for a month or two and then used intermittently. Is that defined also in the handbook?
It is not. That is actually defined separately in our municipal code. It's really the difference between what is a storage yard and what is a parking lot. We do have two very clean definitions in our zoning code. They aren't included in our handbook. If at the council's pleasure, we can include those definitions in our handbook. And I also do see room for possible a future amendment, next year's amendment, possibly enhancing both of those definitions, because they still do leave a little bit of interpretation and ambiguity when you look at them. Sometimes somebody could confuse a storage lot for a parking lot or a parking lot for a storage lot, but they truly are very separate particular items.
Very good. Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes, just a couple of questions with regard to the handbook that will be part of implementing this change. What's the timing for the new update of that handbook?
Just like we do the code amendments, we like to redo this handbook every year to make sure it very accurately interprets the code. The timing of this latest edition for right now, this one has a date of 2017-2018. So we'd like to see a 2018-2019 edition by this summer. It's a pretty easy activity. We've actually already got some kind of drafts floating around the office that we've sort of played with the formatting a little bit, reorganization. But after tonight, maybe after we receive some additional comments and where this zoning code update goes, I think we'll start on that right away. So I would say that I would hope by, and I'm going to use a general term of midsummer, that we can get that done based on our staffing and other workloads. But the code update needs to be reflected anyway in a new handbook, so it's perfect timing.
Excellent. Is that information also available online?
Absolutely. So both our full municipal code and the zoning handbook are available online, and the new versions will be available online in the near future as well.
Okay. And your suggestion that we'd be able to include in their definitions from the code with regard to parking lots and storage, I think would be helpful, just because that seems to be a point of lack of clarity for folks. And anything that we can do to make it easier for people to be in compliance with the city zoning and move ahead in what they want to do in our community, we want to do. Thank you.
I think we've exhausted council comments, and so I will go ahead and open it up to the public. Any member of the public wishing to speak, come to the podium, state your name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you, council members. Sophie Treeter with Treeter and Jones. And I just wanted to thank you for the time and attention to detail that you spent on this. I know that it's got to be a little bit mind-numbing in some ways, but it is a matter of critical importance to your local businesses. And so I do want to commend you for the attention that you have given to this. And I just wanted to add a couple of additional comments that I did not hit my email to you for your further consideration as you continue to work with these issues going forward and potential updates and revisions to various pieces. First is that going from a CUP or an A essentially in the chart to a CUP, that's a huge leap. I mean, that's no permit required to the highest level of permit required. And if you look at page 5 in your zoning handbook, there's actually several potential ladder rungs in between that really might be a better, more efficient way of dealing with a primary use that also has an outdoor storage component. You know, you could do a site plan that staff could check off on, you know, that would show where the storage areas were going to be or how much space they were going to take up. I mean, I don't really see necessarily the need for every single time there is a storage trigger of 10,001 square feet to go to a full-blown CUP. The other thing I would add is that, you know, I appreciate the, you know, not all agencies have a handbook to try to assist their residents. And so I think that is a wonderful thing, but I do think you have to be careful about them getting too much out of sync with each other, particularly where the handbook purports to give some clarity and direction that the ordinances themselves don't give. And I think that's what you really have going on here. So I would not let the handbook get too far out in front of your ordinances. If it needs to be a Band-Aid for the moment to sort of address an interim confusion, that's fine. But really, more than updating the handbook, your priority should be updating these ordinances. I think I pointed out in my lengthy email multiple places where they're in conflict, there's confusion, there's ambiguity. And so fast-tracking that above the handbook, I think, would be in order. And then the only thing I would ask is, in the handbook updates, whether or not that handbook update itself is something that is subject to council approval. And the only reason that I ask that is that, of course, you know, we can tell just from this one narrow issue and item that there are multiple ways to interpret an ordinance and to apply any number of these ordinances. And sometimes staff has their interpretation, sometimes property owners have their interpretation, sometimes the general public wants to see it interpreted or applied in a different way. And ultimately, you, as the elected officials, are the arbiters of how the code should be interpreted and applied. And so allowing too much direction in the form of a handbook that you guys don't actually have your hands on or in at some point would be something that I would think might not be the most prudent step. So, but at the same time, do you want to spend your time having hearings on handbook updates when you could update the ordinance? So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Thank you. William Vega, 3212 El Camino. I'm glad I stayed because we have a big problem in our planned unit development. The facilities are limited in parking. When the project was approved, it was approved for approximately 9 spots per building. In this case, I own the parking lot. Don't ask me why, but that's the way it was divided for 2 buildings, and occupy and own 1 building. The situation is there is a tremendous amount of off-shifting costs from these small little companies onto their neighbors to maximize profits. One of the issues is the Cider House has turned their parking lot into an event center, and that has removed
Mr. Vega, we're actually doing a zoning change tonight, or actually a clarification.
Right, it's a clarification, but I want to make sure that my public hearing rights weren't violated by a
mending or manipulation of a code.
So are you speaking to this specific item?
I'm speaking
item
to this because sure this is clear. A huge okay. issue. Your interpretation could change what happens, okay. how a person executes their business and how they manipulate their business license okay. to cause a irreparable harm to their neighbors. In this case, I'm experiencing that. I've been working with the city manager and with the development director for almost a year and a half. Myself and AccuZip has been going down and speaking with these officials, trying to work this out. Right now I own the parking lot, but the sign, when it was finaled on the building next to me for the handicap, was on the building as a manipulation to externalize his costs and increase the tenant's parking. He took the sign down. Now the handicap for that building is being used as regular parking. They're parking on the buffer zone, and they're parking in that spot. This is the same people that are exercising in the middle of the street, public street, competing with automobiles and trucks. We need some oversight. We can't always do things to bring business without a conscience. This is not right. I have been suffering with this. I want to be a good neighbor, but I also want to protect our investment there and live with a certain amount of dignity as an ethical business person. And this needs to be resolved. So I don't want a shortcut with some handbook to change the issue. The Cider House has had 500 and 600 car events taking up all the parking, no special event permits, and they've taken 6 of the parking spots, which they own about 18 because they bought the building adjoining, and turned that into a patio picnic area, permanent. The place that does the actual gutter service has like 12 or 13 trucks and only 8 spots, including their handicap. They leave 2 large trucks permanently parked in the street. So we need some help there, please. Don't let a handbook change zoning law. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, I will close public comment, and I will bring it back to our community development director. If you could maybe address Mr. Vega's questions, just if any of what we're doing tonight in this handbook would be affecting him, and also anything you heard from Ms. Treeter that might need attention.
Yes, absolutely. For Mr. Vega, I don't see any correlation to the zoning amendments that are being proposed tonight. We're not addressing parking numbers. We're not addressing that situation in the business park area that he's in. We're simply addressing clarification of outdoor storage in that particular component. We have been working with Mr. Vega, and we'll continue to do that on the code enforcement complaints that he has, but it's unrelated to the zoning amendments that are happening here. In regards to the handbook, I think Mrs. Trader has some wonderful comments there, and our handbook doesn't create code or have interpretations that go beyond the code. It simply has a format and pulls the actual code into a format in here that's easy to find, easy to read. It doesn't manipulate the zoning. It doesn't reinterpret the zoning. It just simply puts it in a different format of the most prevalently used code sections into a handbook. That's all it does.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's actually been helpful to many businesses over the last few years to have that handbook to help them navigate the code.
Businesses and to staff. It's helpful to us. So,
how do we ensure, and I know some of it we're doing now, but how do we ensure when a change happens to the actual zoning ordinance that it does follow through to the handbook so that we don't have differences? How do we... and I don't need a detail, but is there some sort of a check and balance? How do we make sure that that happens?
Sure. Just like this code update now, it has to go immediately into when it becomes adopted, if it does, after its second reading and after its 30 days, we essentially have to create a new edition of this handbook for every zoning code update. Typically, this kind of update happens once a year, and typically we create one of these once a year. So it comes... it recurs at the same time. And that's our goal, is to keep doing that. And we typically, what we do is we pretty only print out about 10 copies of these because we know the next year we're only going to do a whole other one. It's really a digital document is where it's most prevalently used. And so it's pretty easy to update. It's pretty easy to keep alive.
Okay. Thank you. I want to reiterate that what we're doing tonight is not actually making a change per se. It's something that businesses that have outdoor storage of 10,000 feet or more are already required to do under our standards. We are just putting it into the zoning code so that a business or someone wanting to open a business doesn't go to the zoning code, not see it, and not bother to look at the rest of the information that they need to, not talk to city staff, but just kind of zero in on one thing and go with that, because there's a lot more to opening a business, to building a business, to building a building and making improvements than simply just looking at the zoning code. And from my perspective, what I'm very concerned about is that we retain quality, that we contain we keep a professional look in our commercial corridor. For many years, people have used a very negative term to describe Atascadero, and it has the word trash in it. And the city has worked very hard in the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 10 years to overcome that, and we've done a tremendous job with that. And we want to continue that. So I just want to say that 10,000 means 10,000. It's not 10,001. I mean, that's a quarter of an acre. That's a pretty large space. And so if you have that amount of outdoor storage, we want it to look professional. A little screening, just making it look like a professional corridor. That's what we're looking for, and that's what's important, and that's what's required now. Whether or not businesses are in compliance with that is another story, and that's what we're looking to do with enforcement and what we're looking to do tonight with clarifying our code. Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, you have some comments.
Yeah, I had actually two questions that relate to comments that Ms. Treeter made. One regarding the handbook. She asked if the handbook was subject to council review, but I also wondered, I'm assuming, you know, the zoning ordinance is the governing document. So if there is any conflict perceived, you know, or confusion, if you will, between the zoning ordinance and the handbook, obviously the zoning ordinance takes precedence, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is just like a brochure or handout.
It's just intended to be helpful to people, but if there arose a circumstance where it was kind of created confusion, you go back to the zoning ordinance and that's the governing document. So, okay. The other, she made a comment regarding, you know, going from something being allowed to a CUP and that there's other alternatives in the middle, and she did specifically mention site plan. I assume that an AUP would be another example of a level of review beyond just allowable, but not all the way up at CUP level. And part of this entire process of why you bring these things forward to us is, you know, to try to streamline things to some degree, not just improve things, but also streamline them for members of the public and for yourself as staff. Did you give any consideration to, in some of these cases, you know, going for a lower or intermediate level of review, you know, as opposed to a CUP?
Yes. And a matter of fact, last year when we did, actually it was 2 years ago, we did a zoning update and reduced the review level of several things down to administrative use permit. And we can continue looking at that at council's discretion. With the outdoor storage, that is one that, from staff's perspective, does rise to a higher level of significance of community-wide interest and neighborhood interest that was beyond the scope of a community development director hearing.
All right, thank you.
Do we have any other council comments or possibly looking for a motion?
Mayor?
Yes.
Can I just make a brief plug? If someone is out there listening to this, if they're interested in opening a business here in Atascadero, please, please, please make an appointment, come in and meet with staff. The zoning handbook, while very helpful, is the Cliff Note version of the municipal code. The municipal code is very thick, has a lot of things that are triggered in each other, and while we try and be as helpful and as clarifying in there, we certainly would like people to come in. There's no cost to do that. They can make an appointment with staff, tell us what you're thinking about, and we'll tell you not only about your planning, but your building codes that are triggered and other things, so that you have an idea of what you're getting into before you purchase a property or lease a property. So I still want to let people know that's available, that's highly encouraged, so that we can help walk you through some of that. As you know, our Muni code's fairly thick, and that's just a small portion of the state law that you're also subject to. So please come in.
Very good
advice.
And
just real quick, thank you for mentioning that. I wanted to emphasize, underline that we have an open door. We're here every day. We do strongly encourage people just to call us, drop by the counter, talk to me, my staff. We really are happy to help guide you through a business process, a license process, or no process at all for that matter, to have you be successful in Atascadero. So thank you, City Manager, for mentioning that.
Thank you both. And I think one of the options that you had put in here, which we haven't really talked about, and it seems like tonight it might be too soon for us to make that decision, but was reducing that threshold to 5,000 square feet of space. Personally, I would like to see us relook at that next year when we update the zoning code again. I see maybe Councilmember Fonzie has something to say about that. But again, we're looking at this commercial park zone not as being industrial, but we're trying to have a balance, again, of that professional quality. And how do we do that with the businesses that we have and that we want, and also keep it looking the way that we want to and presenting a professional front for Atascadero. Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. I think it's something that possibly we should talk about when we go back and review the general plan, and we may change the commercial park standards at that point in time. I hate to do it incrementally. It takes a lot of staff time. The general plan is coming up when, Bill?
I'm going to leave it general in the next couple of years.
Okay, very good.
We're getting errors in our forecast.
Two to five, two to three, two to four.
We're looking at funding opportunities and scheduling opportunities.
Yes.
So we're working on that early stage of that right now. And as I mentioned before, El Camino plan, housing element, some of these things will feed into our general plan update. And I'd like to say to start that process 2021, 2022.
Very good. I would say sooner is better than later, but I know it's a huge undertaking with a lot of public hearings. I was wondering, just for the sake of clarification for those in the public, when Ms. Treeter talked about those interim steps, the site plans and others, it might be helpful to talk about a conditional use permit and what it can entail, and whether it's tailored to each project or it has certain guidelines that would be helpful to someone who is developing a site.
Absolutely. And there's actually two levels of conditional use permit. We have a minor conditional use permit that's designed for someone moving a new land use into an existing building or an existing site, for example, or doing something minor of nature. And then we have a major conditional use permit, which is a new site development, building a new building on a property, establishing a new land use that's never been on that particular property and doing major changes to that site. And they come with two different fees. Both of them would go to the Planning Commission. The way that process works is we do take an application into the counter. There are fees associated with that. It does get assigned to a staff planner. We evaluate all of the issues on the property. In some cases, we make a recommendation and assign specific conditions to that land use that help it be compatible with the neighborhood, help it be compatible with that site and our general plan policies. And in certain cases, a conditional use permit may tell us that a particular land use in a location is not appropriate at all, and we'll make a recommendation for denial because it's just not compatible with the neighborhood. Generally, we have a conditional use permit requirement because a land use is kind of on the fence. It's not really perfect in that location. It could be perfect if you add conditions to it, but it may not be suitable at all. Even if you add conditions to it, just because of that particular location and just because of the parameters of that particular business. So we tend to put land uses in a conditional use permit category when they might be of that nature, whether they're great in magnitude or they create impacts or they create aesthetic issues. They need some refinement, and they need the public and the Planning Commission to weigh in on them. So that process is typically takes us several weeks to get something scheduled for Planning Commission, but what I will say is our Planning Commission has been wonderful in working with the business community, and I think very flexible, and we really try to make things work out.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to make a motion that we approve staff's recommendation with an addition that we include definitions of the land use within the handbook and also more information about storage and parking differences.
Phil, does that give you enough direction that's specific to be able to follow through with?
Absolutely, yes.
Wonderful. Do we have a second? We have a first by Councilmember Fonzie, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
I need to read the title really quick. Mm-hmm. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending the Atascadero Municipal Code, Title IX, Planning and Zoning, Section 9-1.110, Public Hearing, Section 9-3.330, Non-Residential District Allowable Land Uses, Sections 9-3.340 through 9-3.345 and 9-3.348 through 9-3.349, Property Development Standards, Section 9-6.112, Farm Animal Raising, Section 9.6, 9-6.174, Seasonal or Temporary Sales, Section 9-12.104, Required Approvals, and Title 11 Subdivisions, Section 11-4.06, Noticing a Planning Commission Hearing on Tentative Map and Determining this ordinance is exempt from review under the California Environmental Quality Act. Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're on to our management reports, and this will be our sphere of influence review, and we will receive this from our community development director, Phil Dunsmore.
Really quick, can we get Councilmember Newsom?
Oh, yeah. Let's bring Councilmember Newsom back in. That would be good. I'll take just a moment here.
Just waiting for our council member to return.
Madam Mayor, in our moment of silence while we get fully staffed again, I just wanted to comment for the public that we've gone through the process on this zoning ordinance and lots of technical language and concerns, not to drive people nuts, but precisely for the concerns that the gentleman raised tonight, that the activities of one business can affect the value of other businesses in the area and affect the values of properties, affect the quality of life in our community. So it's setting ground rules as to how we behave and what's allowed so that we manage the effects that we have on each other as a community.
Council.
We're all part of that. Thank
Member
you.
Member Newsom is back, so Director Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight we have the pleasure of having a couple of representatives from the Local Agency Formation Commission, otherwise known as LAFCO. Not really a comedy company, but instead the agency that helps the city and the county collaborate with each other on our boundaries. And tonight we're going to be talking about our sphere of influence boundary, and that's a boundary that lies at or outside of our city limits, and we're going to be talking about an update that we periodically do, and you know, from time to time we look at other areas within that zone. Sometimes we call it an area of influence, and there's also a memorandum of agreement that we formalize with the county. We have one of those now, and this discussion will talk about potential amendments to that. So tonight we're going to start with a high-level discussion. Want to give everyone an overview, get everyone comfortable with the terminology, what these boundaries mean, what the MOA means, what it does for the future of our community, the future planning of our community, and do that. What I'm going to do tonight is let both David Church and Mike Prater, who are here with us tonight from LAFCO, lead that discussion, bring us through the presentation, and then we can answer questions, and I can chime in on some of those things. But in the end, hope to get some city council feedback, and I'll come back around to the end, really on what areas we might want to focus on and some of the details as we get further into this study, and then we'll be returning at a later date to take a closer look at this update, and it'll also be the subject of a future LAFCO hearing as well. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to introduce David Church.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you very much. We don't tell a lot of jokes, really. We don't. And so that's not part of our mission here at LAFCO. We are an agency that's been set up by the state of California back in 1963.
If you could bring the microphone up a little bit.
How's that?
Better.
Thank you. Okay, local knowledge. We are an agency that is set up by the state of California under the Cortese-Knox-Hertzberg Act. But back in 1963, the state of California saw fit to set up LAFCOs actually to help organize growth and development and really to rationalize decisions in the sphere of influence that was created later by the state of California. Organizing that growth and development goes right to the heart of LAFCO's mission in terms of annexation. Oh, thanks, Phil. Thank you. Annexations, and you have to have a piece of property inside a sphere before you can annex it. So the sphere of influence is really a planning boundary, if you will. Let's see. So the sphere in the code sections, and before I get into this too far, I really want to thank, first of all, Roberta for her years of service on our commission and for doing what she does for LAFCO and for always asking pertinent and hard questions. So I'm always thankful for those. So thanks for that. And then also thanks to Phil and for Rochelle for taking an interest, for giving us some of their time, and for helping guide us in terms of preparing the Sphere of Influence update, which is really reliant on information given to us by the city. And that cooperation is very, very important. By the code section, it says that the sphere of influence is a plan for the probable physical boundary of a jurisdiction. And what that intends is that basically that we help plan for the logical, orderly development of a jurisdiction, a city or a special district. Tascadero's last comprehensive update was back in 2011. We did a municipal service review, and we'll talk a little more about what that is later on. We also had a memorandum of agreement with the county that was approved by both the city council and the board of supervisors. Last annexation that occurred was in 1999. Highland Park was the last annexation. Eagle Ranch has been the most recent consideration for the city, as you know, for a possible future annexation. We are required by state law to update the spheres of influence every 5 years or as needed. So we can do that sooner or we can do it a little later by the state law. We started doing this back in 2001, and we started updating the cities and the special districts all in the county. We analyzed different study areas that might be considered for the sphere of influence. And that's important because a study area may end up inside the sphere, it may not. But we look at those areas. Typically, a sphere is a territory that's adjacent to a city or adjacent to the district, and it's expected to be served in the future. So it really is accounting for the services and the service levels that a jurisdiction can provide. Jurisdictions are not required to annex properties inside the sphere of influence. And that's important because for planning purposes, a jurisdiction may not want to annex a property, and that jurisdiction has the authority to plan for that future. It's not required. Conversely, the sphere of influence does not give a jurisdiction any more legal authority or regulatory control. So it doesn't, because the sphere of influence is outside on Eagle Ranch, the city of Atascadero has no more authority or legal authority over that area. In fact, the county's land use laws pertain. So it doesn't prevent development in the county. The landowner there would retain their rights to develop that property in the county as they currently could. It's a decision-making tool. It's not a land use approval. Cities have land use approval authority. Counties have land use approval authority. Special districts do not. So special districts are a little bit different. It sends the message that this is an area that we think we can serve and that we are going to have urban services to, so it helps for the jurisdiction to be able to provide for planning for those urban services. The key one that always comes to mind for us is water. Does a jurisdiction have an adequate, reliable, sustainable water supply to be able to serve a particular development or a particular area? What do we use to base a sphere on? Well, we look at the general plan of the city or the jurisdiction, and then we look at the county's general plan, and we bring those together to talk about the sphere. The city and county discussions regarding the sphere of influence, we actually sit down with staff and we start talking about the sphere of influence in the different areas and what might be development plans out there. What are the future development plans around the city or around a jurisdiction? What is the city's ability or capability to provide services for different areas? That is a key element that LAFCO tries to answer and does so in what's called a municipal service review. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second here. We do look at ag open space resources as well as other environmental constraints, and we'll talk about the agricultural areas in a second here. Mike Prater, our deputy executive officer, will talk about the study areas and some of the prime ag land that is involved in some of those study areas. So municipal service review, it's required by law that we prepare one when we update a sphere of influence. It has seven different factors that are involved. It is really the key document that tells and informs the decision about where the sphere of influence should go and can it be served in the future by a jurisdiction. It really evaluates a jurisdiction's service capability. We look at water, sewer, roads, fire, police, administrative capabilities, future growth. And we do that based on a city's or a district's existing documentation. We really don't go out and recreate a wheel. So it's a summary level review, if you will. The sphere of influence update looks at growth in population in a particular area or by a jurisdiction. We look at the present and planned land use for a particular area. Municipal services, present and probable future need. What are the needs in the future? We also look to identify disadvantaged, unincorporated communities in the area. And we are required by law to identify those inside a sphere of influence. Memorandum of agreement is interesting. Cortese-Knox-Hertzberg Act allows for this process to happen, and we've taken it and taken it a little further and refined it here at the San Luis Obispo LAFCO. And we have, every city has a memorandum of agreement with the exception of Grover Beach, which is essentially landlocked. But every other city has a memorandum of agreement between the city and the county. They have been approved by the board and by the city councils. It addresses the location of the sphere of influence, actually getting an agreement on where that sphere of influence should go. We look at referral process. What process can we implement to have increased cooperation between the city and the county for projects that are in a referral area? Maybe it's outside the sphere area. Probably is sometimes. So getting that referral documented. And then we also have terms and provisions for development standards that are in the area. So we try and identify a process for developing a particular area. For example, we may identify in the memorandum of agreement an area that in the future the city will develop a specific plan for this area, and that will be the planning tool that's used to then develop it and annex it into the jurisdiction or into the city. So we may identify that in the memorandum of agreement as the process or the way that's going to happen. Really, the MRN agreement encourages city-county communication about projects in the sphere and about projects in the surrounding areas. So we enhance that a little bit with the memorandum of agreement process. With that, this is the sphere of influence as it currently exists. You can see, let's see if I can work this. Up at the top, the very northern area is where it says SOI. That's a small 5-acre lot that's been in the sphere for a number of years. And then you can see this is Eagle Ranch down here below, which is in the sphere of influence right now. The idea behind having Eagle Ranch in the sphere of influence was to take those 452 actual lots that are there, consolidate them in some fashion under a specific plan that the city would annex, being able to then save or preserve more agricultural and open space lands. That was the idea behind putting it in the sphere and to work towards those goals so that it doesn't get developed, frankly, in the haphazard pattern that you would see if you saw all of the lots that are out there right now. So that's how the sphere works. That's what we came up with last time. Right now we're working towards the sphere of influence update right now, and I think Mike is going to come up and talk about some of the study areas. But before he does, I'll answer any questions you might have for me, and then we'll get to Mike.
Why don't we have him come up, and we'll kind of go through it all and then see what questions we might have.
Good deal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. We are kind of a comedy team.
Yeah.
Great. Go the other way. Okay. Thank you, David. So as both Phil and David had indicated, we came up with some possible study areas to consider. This was done fairly quickly in kind of a first blush look at what we might consider if we're going to dive into some of these areas in more detail into our official documents. But essentially we came up with four areas that we were looking at, kind of the east side. And just to kind of walk you through, it looks like about 10,000 square feet of additional sphere boundary is what we're considering here. Again, the city council in itself can give us feedback. That's what we're here to ask for. You can expand these areas. You can reduce these areas for which you want to for us to look at. Typically, we look at the city's general plan to identify if there's any land uses in any of these areas. And as I heard earlier tonight, that might be a future undertaking here in the near to midterm future. So as you go through that process, you may want to contemplate some other areas that are outside of your city limit that you want to plan for in the future. Not only is the city plan, city general plan part of the component, but there may be development proposals that are going in the county. You may catch wind of those. There may be landowners that are looking to pursue some future developments that may need some urban level services. We look at those plans to see whether or not that makes sense to put that in a sphere or not. Generally, the way we came up with these areas were we kind of took the boundary of the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. We looked at the Atascadero basin, groundwater basin, as the limiting factor. So that was about a mile outside of this current city limits. Those kind of are the parameters in which we were looking at. And then we headed south. We wanted to make sure we kind of kept you within the Atascadero Basin rather than move you into the Paso Basin and begin to have to deal with that sigma mess.
Thank you.
So towards the south end, we took in the area to, just north of the Garden Farms community. That's about 2 miles outside of the city limits in line. And now you're butting up against another agency in that sense, a special district. So that's kind of the limiting factor of what we were looking at, and we wanted to include Eagle Ranch as an area that's currently in your sphere and looking at maintaining that or not. So as we kind of looked at these areas, one of the first or many of the first things that we look at, this is a very busy map, obviously you can see, but the green area are ag contracts, Williamson Ag contracts that are in preserve under the county. So one of our primary tenets is to protect ag and open space, and annexing Williamson Ag property is an extra hurdle if achievable at all. And so we initially just blush on the map, where are those at? Where are those located? Are they within any of these areas that we're looking at? We look at crop type data. We look at soils types to see whether or not crops can be grown there. So these are some of the things that we initially kind of look at to see, are these areas even entertained as an area to be studied? Kind of as a first nod to that. What I wanted to note here is LAFCO has a definition of prime ag land, and it's a very low bar. $400 per acre. So if it meets that, then it meets a definition of prime ag land. And that is one of the primary tenets that we look at to maintain. So looking at all of these areas here, what's in easement area of that kind of 10,000 square feet of acres there, we're looking at 1,400 acres that immediately jump out off the page as being in easements. Prime soils are your class one, class two soils that we generally look at. In this case, we're looking at the purple areas, which are of farmland of statewide importance. And the pinkish areas are prime land if irrigated. So they may not have water now, but if you give them water, they'd be ripe for growing crops. So we're looking at that. We're looking at about 3,400 acres of prime soils that fall just within these study areas that we're contemplating. And as you can see, largely within areas 1, 2, and 3. So if we get in, drive down deeper, we're looking at just study area 1. This is a possible area that we wanted to contemplate. Just this area alone is about 3,800 acres. It's zoned agriculture with a couple of pockets of residential, rural residential. Looking at the county's permit data, we didn't really see any major proposals that were set to be into the future that the county's contemplating. The need for, so that puts a need for service kind of in the unclear category. We're not sure if it really needs services. We don't really see any development activity happening in these areas. As we indicated, your general plan really does not contemplate anything outside of your city limits, with the exception of a couple of areas. In this area, it doesn't really speak to it, so we don't know. And the county's general plan, it speaks to maintaining this area as an agricultural use. So that's the information we have right now. Dropping down to study area 2, we're looking at about shy of 1,200 acres zoned all agriculture. Again, no development proposals really here. That little red area is an area where the neighborhood is looking to maybe upzone their property from ag to rural residential, but it's not really an intense development. We're looking at a couple of conservation easements here to the south, kind of in the shaded area. And again, kind of similar flavor here with the city's general plan and the county's general plan and what's looking at here.
Could we interrupt one quick moment for a question on this slide, Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes, you had some red area. Is this the area considered for possible residential, or what is the red?
Yeah, that little red U shape is a neighborhood that's put in an application for the county to zone from agriculture to residential, rural residential. So they want to do a general plan amendment in the county.
And is this near the area where there's a mobile home park? There's an older Mustang mobile home park out in that area that's fairly high density.
This area is acres of about 20 acres. Properties are in around about 20 acre zones.
Thank you.
So this is study area 3 here, this little possible area. This is south of the Santa Barbara Road area. Just north of Garden Farms along El Camino. Familiar with that area? That's 2,200 acres, zoned residential suburban. It's within a high fire hazard area, largely built out. It has approximately 743 existing homes that are sitting on there. There's some potential for some additional homes, but again, more rural setting, larger lot kind of pattern. Again, just north of this area, we're looking at some ag preserve that's just in the north area, and then we're looking at the soils condition that does allow some sort of crop data. In this particular case, the city's general plan actually does envision something that to not happen in this area. So you have some language in your current general plan that speaks to not creating a more intense use and not really having that be served by the city. So there's an area in which the city does speak to outside of its city limits. And lastly is the Eagle Ranch development. David indicated much of that. It has an existing 452 lots. Obviously, it's a kind of a haphazard configuration, and it, obviously, the city could come to an acceptable concept there with a specific plan. That seems to be more of an ideal solution to allowing some development move in on that property rather than allow it to build out under the county. So I think that's my part here. We'll throw it back to David a little bit on kind of where we're at and where we think we're going to go, and then maybe Phil can fill in some additional questions.
And if you'd both stay handy for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. One other clarification is we also share your counsel as well at this point in time. So just to know that Brian is our counsel and helping us out in terms of legal matters at LAFCO. So full disclosure on that. Just to kind of summarize the process, right now we're preparing documentation. Sphere of Influence update, the Municipal Service Review, the Memorandum of Agreement, CEQA documentation, that's all being prepared right now. We are looking to release it for public review in July, August, if we can get to that point, and LAFCO hearing in the fall, it looks like, October, November. And with that, we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And Phil, would it make sense for us to go ahead and ask questions of these two gentlemen, or did you need to, would it be helpful if you wrapped something up for us before we begin those questions?
Let me just wrap up something really quick, and I think, again, we're just looking for your council, the feedback from City Council tonight, and again, a little discussion with LAFCO, but also wanted to note that I think in that schedule that they've got there, it doesn't show sort of our end of the schedule, which is also bringing something back to the City Council. I'm sure there's interest to see where this is evolving. So we haven't built that in yet, so I think there's a little bit of wiggle room as to how we fit that in and what we come back with. So tonight, again, we're not making any final decisions or giving any definitive direction. It's a little higher level, what areas should we look at, and then I think staff would like to come back with a little more definitive information to you somewhere in between this particular process, just to be clear.
Thank you. So for anyone who is watching, listening, and maybe you just tuned in a few minutes ago and you heard the words Eagle Ranch and you thought, oh my gosh, they're voting on Eagle Ranch tonight. No, we're not. We are looking, as has been talked about, spheres of influence, areas that the city may or may not somewhere down the line want to annex in. Maybe we never would. It's a matter of looking at what might make sense in terms of where we could service areas and how to proceed in an orderly fashion as the city and those around us grow. If you would indulge me, I see lights, but I would actually like to maybe give just a first go, if she would like, to Councilmember Fonzie, because I think that she might ask some questions and things that would enlighten us more or maybe provoke some more questions in some of us. So I will keep the lights here. I'm not going to let those go, but maybe Councilmember Fonzie, if you'd like to start.
Sure, I'd be happy to. When the sphere of influence came up and I knew that we were going to be looking at Atascaderos, I saw something in the newspaper that was talking about affordable housing for the county. And obviously, affordable housing is a big issue for the entire state and Atascadero as well. And one of the areas that they designated was in South Atascadero, outside the city boundary, but in the unincorporated area. And this got me a bit alarmed, especially in light of a recent law that requires that cities serve disadvantaged or problem areas that have problems with their sewers, or lack of sewers, septic tank, and so forth. South Atascadero, I understand, is generally larger parcels, but there are several buildings along El Camino Real, in particular a convalescent home that's now on the market that's been proposed for a veterans home, for affordable housing. It could be any number of things. Because it's high density, it has a huge septic field that they pumped every week when it was operating. And I'm wondering if something at the edge of this sphere of influence, very near Garden Farms, could be required to be served by the city of Atascadero if the county puts in some kind of high-density development.
That goes in the category of hard question. difficult to know, and I will be straight away because That area would be outside of this. It's not adjacent to the city, so there's area between that property and the city that you'd have to cross to be able to serve. There's also be a substantial amount of infrastructure, and I think I get your concern about that happening. The new law and how that would apply, I don't really know how that would apply in terms of requirements. So, in effect, I don't know really if it's going to be required of the city to serve that area in the future or not. I think what we can do, though, is look at that new law in the context of the municipal service review and what is that new law, and we had a study session at LAFCO about that new law, but what does that new law intend and what might happen from that new law? Can we analyze that a little bit more so we could put that into our documentation before we get to the actual establishment of a sphere of influence?
I understand that this may never happen. This is just a possibility. Sure. But the idea of having high-density affordable housing, which is generally what is proposed because smaller lot sizes are more affordable, in South Atascadero, which the county has broached with the city and other agencies. So if we were to put this in an MOA and put the entire South Atascadero area that was served by the Mutual Water Company, would that be something that we could do?
We can address it in the MOA. Certainly. And what we could do is, and what we have done in past MOAs, if we've identified certain areas and then come up with terms and provisions that are agreed to by the county and the city with regard to that area. Sometimes we can't get as far as each jurisdiction wants to go, but we can certainly put it into the MOA and discuss it as a topic and as an area that is of concern to the city, and likely it will have the same kind of concern from the county as well. So maybe we can come up with some solutions about how that would be processed.
Very good. And a similar concern about Area 2, which was across the river and slightly south of Highway 41 East, that there is a aging mobile home park, which is affordable housing and is fairly high density, but not proposed. I don't see it on here. But it's not within our sphere of influence. And with this other development proposed on 20 acres or more, I'm supposing it could be less than 20 acres. Is that correct?
I don't know.
We don't know what's coming forward.
We don't know.
And no. This might be another area that might lend itself to an MOA, I would think.
And you know what we'll do is we'll flesh this out and see what's really out there in terms of development potential. And we'll look at that more intensely during our discussions with staff, and we'll report back. Usually what we do with study areas is we'll come back with a whole section in the sphere of influence update section or chapter, and it'll describe each one of the study areas, and it'll describe the potential that's there, and some of these issues hopefully will be clarified when we come forward. So it's good to put them on the table right now.
Okay. And one last one, that one of your criteria is that it would be the property area would be served in the future. Atascadero is a little bit strange, and I know you live in Santa Margarita and you're very familiar with Atascadero, but our Mutual Water Company is outside of our city boundary. It's already served with water. And actually, they're served within our school district. They come into our town and use mutual aid upon occasion. There's other ways that these parcels that are outside our city are served by the city of Atascadero using our libraries, our stores, our roads, many other things. So I'm wondering if you could explain how served in the future would apply to Atascadero, since we're already serving them to a certain extent.
Another category of hard, but that's served in the future. What we've done in the past and what we did, for example, the city of San Luis Obispo at one point had the same concern, that they were serving outside of their area and that they were incurring impacts from other areas as well. In large degree, cities and counties need to front-load those in their land-use planning processes. LAFCO doesn't have a lot of, we don't have land-use control at all. In fact, we're prohibited from using, from determining land-use. What we encourage in the MOA is for the city and the county at early stages to talk about these issues and talk about who's doing what, who's serving what, and where, and really identify those issues and get a robust discussion going on about those things. Other than that, LAFCO doesn't really, we're not going to get in and do the planning for the city or for the county. We really allow the city and the county to kind of work those things out.
Thank you. I appreciate your input.
Sure.
Next, we'll go to Councilmember Funk, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. Councilmember Fonzie has addressed, has hit on the topic of my first question, and I'll just follow up on that. With regard to the areas south of Atascadero, between here and Garden Farms, can you shed any further light on the areas that the county might be looking at for the affordable housing initiative that Councilwoman Fonzie mentioned with respect to the parameters of Area 3 as you drew it on the map?
We're gonna take that as feedback from your council that you really want us to look into that. So we're gonna put that in there as an issue that we're gonna talk about with the county and with the city staffers. So
yeah, I think that would be important because it has implications for our city in terms of this. We are the natural place for those folks to look for service, and the traffic that comes out of there. A lot, any northbound traffic is
so
going
I
to.
I think we're actually going to have a lot of questions
okay.
that we need to keep it sort of higher level tonight. So
okay.
as he said, he knows that's an issue. It's on the table.
Okay, great. So think about we're in the process of a wastewater treatment planning for updating that, and that the capacity issues. This will be an important consideration.
And that issue in particular, we really focus on that kind of issue.
Okay.
And how that's coming along, what the timing is on construction, what the timing is on improvements, what the timing is for development. So we will focus in on that issue in particular. One other thing I would keep in mind is that the sphere of influence, that's why it's good to put it probably in the MOA,
mm-hmm.
the sphere of influence intends for an area to be served
mm-hmm.
by a jurisdiction. So the MOA can talk about another area that's not necessarily going to be served by the city, but lays out what's the city's intent in that area, what's the county's intent, and can we bring those together? So if you put a sphere somewhere, that's really sending the message that we're going to serve that area. So keep that in mind going forward. It's important.
Okay. And then you mentioned in your presentation that the MSR, among other considerations, includes financial considerations. And I wanted to know if consideration had been given to Atascadero's strategic position relative to other communities in the county, where we are basically the poor stepchild financially of the county, that we have borne a disproportionate share of the housing burden for the county, and as such do not have the revenue that other cities have to maintain our roads, to manage our police force, and to provide the services that our city looks to. And I'm wondering, and excellent documentation of that is in the city's strategic financial planning documents that I encourage to your attention. If consideration can be given in working through these parameters to ways in which a more equitable revenue base might be managed for the city of Atascadero so that we improve the balance we have between available tax base and the services required of our city.
That the documentation you mentioned will certainly be used in our review. Typically, our financial review is a summary of a jurisdiction's financial health. We don't necessarily get into comparing it in the context of other jurisdictions. We look more at how's the jurisdiction doing in terms of its health, but I understand your issue for sure.
Sure. And lastly, you did not indicate the areas immediately north of the city along Vineyard Drive between our city's current boundaries and that were not mentioned in here, but that is an area to which there's a lot of intercourse with the northern parts of Atascadero. And I wondered if consideration has been given, particularly in light of getting a better financial base for the city, of looking at the impact of those areas up towards Vineyard. And you know, and likewise, we've seen that an issue with an cannabis large agricultural proposal in some of that ag area just north of town. And the primary impacts are in Tascadero. So I wonder if the consideration is given to that being part of the MOA, and if that would even be a useful way to discuss any of those issues.
We can look at that in the context of the MOA. I think that's probably a good place to park that particular issue. And we will bring it up and we will talk about it at staff levels, and we'll see if we can get it embedded in the terms and provisions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Newsom, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
I'm going to try to keep my question pretty simple. Your slides you presented on the study areas and the detail is really interesting and very informative. I think it'd be beneficial if the council could be provided those so we can use those as a reference point and try to understand sphere of influence. It is so large, it's hard to grasp all of the moving parts. So the more information we're provided, the better detail for us. Thank you.
Sure, we can get those to you, for sure.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Have a couple of questions for you. In our packet, I didn't see it here in the slides you had, we were provided, somewhat hard to read because it's in black and white, but a City of Atascadero referral map. And if I'm reading the border correctly, it goes all the way up to Vineyard, it goes all the way almost down to the grade, incorporates, encompasses all the Santa Margarita and goes way out beyond Santa Margarita. Can you explain what referral map is? Does it just mean if something's happening out there, you're going to tell the city about it, or what does it mean?
Well, a referral map is usually between the county and the city, and it's an area where if there's county projects going on or county activities going on, projects, usually land use projects, it would be referred to the city staff for comment. And so it's a referral map for actual projects. And that's, I think, maybe what, and Phil, maybe you can help me with this. Maybe that map comes from the previous MOA, possibly? Or is it in your general plan?
It comes from the previous MOA. Okay. And we do receive these, what we call project referrals from time to time, from county planning staff that are within that area. They're pretty good about doing that. Once in a while, they'll miss one.
Well, it's quite a large area.
It's up
to
their staff.
You could have hundreds of projects out there.
There's a lot. And typically they only give us things that they think might be of magnitude to cause us concern or will have us comment on. So typically things like the cannabis farms, things like if there's a large development project happening, they'll send us a project referral. Even if it's a subdivision of property, we'll get those. And they'll give us 30 or 60 days to be able to comment and even attend a hearing if we want to, and voice our concern, or at least let the communities know that are in our city about what's happening so that they can attend. So we have that in our community development department. Okay. We receive those, and the city manager's office receives those as well. So we're able to collaborate on those projects.
Okay. Thank you. And you referred to the sphere of influence as an area in which the city might be expected to provide service at some point in time in the future. And on this map, we only have the one very small piece of property up north, and then the much larger Eagle Ranch area, which is, as far as I know, always been in the city's sphere of influence since incorporation. So these other study areas, to distinguish them, these are just to be studied as possible additions to the sphere of influence, or just areas kind of interest to the city, because obviously what happens there impacts us, even if it's just people who are driving through the city every day.
The answer is yes. It's going to be both of those things. It's going to be an area of interest that maybe we park inside the MOA and are able to address it inside the memorandum of agreement, or the area rises to the level of, yes, the city's going to serve that area or possibly could serve that area in the future, and we're going to put it in the sphere of influence. And the city also has resources to serve those areas. So those are the key questions. So we're looking at them. They're possible study areas. They're possible. It's a possible sphere of influence. But I think some of those areas show that it may be more likely that they end up with the memorandum of agreement with some provisions underneath each one of the areas. And that might be where they end up, because the city may or may not want to say, yeah, we're going to be able to serve this area in the future. And that's a key decision.
Very much see a concern that we're interested in what happens there, but that doesn't mean we have any interest in, you know, trying to provide services to it in the future.
Absolutely. And one other thing to keep in mind is that LAFCO will review this and certainly review the city's desires, and LAFCO will make a decision in determining the sphere of influence. If the MOA, if we can come to agreement between the city and the county with regard to the memorandum of agreement, and they agree on what the sphere should be, it's LAFCO is required to give it great weight. And that means actually LAFCO really needs to take heed of this memorandum of agreement. So that's what we're going to work towards, is identifying a boundary that actually is agreed to by the city and by the county.
Yeah. So the city, of course, has been incorporated since 1979. This COSTA, and LAFCO has been around since 63, but this COSTA-Hawkins Act you referred to being enacted in 2000 requires this review every 5 years. Did spheres of influence exist prior to that, prior to 2000? I thought they did.
They did. Okay. They
so,
did.
So my question is, so we've gone through kind of multiple iterations of this five-year review, even though it may not have actually happened every 5 years.
Thank you.
As one can see, the last one was done in 2011.
True.
Is has Atascadero's spheres of influence, it seems to me they have not changed at all during the time, the 30-plus years I've been around.
They haven't really.
Okay.
And in fact, Eagle Ranch was added, I think, in 2011? 2007. 2007.
Really? Okay. I thought it was always...
I should remember that because I worked
sphere.
On it. But
okay.
That's been in since 2007, and then, but it hasn't changed since 2011. We did a status quo review, and it identified the sphere of influence as it currently is and as it was.
Okay. And I promise I won't get into the weeds, but normally I ask a lot of questions of staff ahead of time, but we didn't see these slides. So there's one on in particular I just got to kind of get answered. If you could scroll through the slides slowly, I'll tell you to stop. Okay, right there. On this particular one, I noticed the area in the lower left defined by the red, I assume is the Mutual Water Company service boundary that was part of the original colony but was not incorporated into the city upon incorporation.
Correct.
And that's never been in our sphere of influence then.
It has not.
I mean, it could have been, but it never has been. Right. And then what the heck is the blue line that's never defined here anywhere?
I think that's the Atascadero subbasin, Mike.
I kind of thought that might be what I thought. Yes. The left part of that went farther over. So okay, but so that might just be the basin, the line boundary.
Correct.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. In looking at the sample agreement we have in here for an MOA, it indicates that, you know, Eagle Ranch has the approximately 452 original lots. They have the legal entitlement to build that if they want to. But what it says in here, it says, therefore, much of Eagle Ranch could be developed in the county using the existing lot configuration. So is that currently what is in our MOA with the county that really says, hey, we have the water, go ahead and build, and there's nothing else in the agreement? Is that correct?
I believe so, that language is in there. Phil, can you help me?
What you have attached to the staff report is the existing MOA.
Thank you.
That's what
and,
I thought.
And that is what we'd like to update with this next update.
Correct.
And so there's room to amend that language.
So, yes, I think that would be important to look at, because if that did develop as is a county, which the property owners have every legal right to do, it would have significant impacts on Atascadero far beyond water. So I think that needs to be addressed in the MOA.
And we agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. I was wondering, does the MOA at all touch on, or can it touch on a tax split, or is that a completely separate?
Interesting question. We've heard that question before as well. And we've talked about it. I think what's happened is the property tax exchange, I think, is what you're talking about for annexations.
Yes.
Between the county and the city. And the one we have that has been used is the master agreement, and that usually has a certain formula that is, in all appearances, more beneficial to the county, particularly since residential housing is expensive to serve. And so it doesn't help encourage cities at all to do annexations of residential projects. I think what we're going to do is we're going to work with the city and the county to put language in the MOA about if you're going to do an annexation, there should be a negotiated property tax agreement on a case-by-case basis. And that way, if you want to use the master agreement, okay, but I think what you should be doing is negotiating a case-by-case basis, a property tax agreement for each annexation. For example, Eagle Ranch, if it ever did come forward, there should be a property tax agreement that's negotiated between the city and the county.
And that could certainly get us to a more equitable split. I did have a question of Phil. We were talking about project referrals, and I'm curious, in the past, how has the county responded to our input when we've had concerns? How concerned are they about those concerns that we have? Do they collaborate with us? What has been the relationship?
It's been a good relationship. They do listen to our comments. They do want us to collaborate and talk about it, and they do take it into account when they prepare a staff report for a project and they make a presentation and they make a recommendation on a project. They do state the local jurisdiction's stance on that particular thing. And that happened most recently. We did have a referral for a small cannabis farm on the north end of town, which we did weigh in on, and they did utilize that testimony from us for that particular public hearing.
Good to know. Thank you. I think right now we seem to have exhausted our questions. Councilmember Fonzie?
I know you have certain criteria that are spelled out in the Cortese-Knox Act, but one of the things that's come up for California as a whole is high fire hazard areas and urban interface. I'm wondering if LAFCO could address that at a future time, and this might be part of Atascadero's. Eagle Ranch was a particular concern of mine when we were talking about annexation because it's burned several times in my lifetime, and it's a high fire hazard area. It would absolutely come from west to east with the prevailing winds into the city. So I'm wondering if that could be something that's considered when you're considering the sphere of influence as well.
Absolutely. We can plug that into municipal service review and give it more attention. I know Mike is taking diligent notes right now because he's getting a lot more work on the municipal service review added. But absolutely, that issue is it's paramount in the state of California right now. We can also discuss it with County Fire and get their input on it as well. And I think that'd be very relevant.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Before I open it up to public comment, do we have any other council questions? All right, seeing none at the moment, go ahead and open it up to public comment. If there's any member of the public wishing to speak, come forward at this time. Seeing nobody rushing up, we will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to council for a conversation and an eventual motion. Councilmember Fonzie.
I hate to keep taking the microphone. I wish you guys would step in here. I would recommend that we work with LAFCO staff to consider an MOA in Area 2 and 3. And I'm not so sure about Area 1. It's mostly ag. But there may be other considerations that you would like to weigh in. That would just be my recommendation.
And you're leaving out 4?
Well, 4 would be a given,
I think,
yes.
Just checking.
In, so. Yeah. Yes.
I didn't know you wanted to remove that. Any other thoughts,
well,
Mayor Pro Tem?
I want to understand, you say you incorporate it in the MOA, but do you mean as possible spheres of influence, or do you just mean to, you know, for further study, or what do you mean by that?
I think it's probably premature. You know, we don't have all the information we need to put it into a sphere of influence, nor does LAFCO. But there are some concerns, particularly in Area 3 with development, mm-hmm. and because they're already colony lots that were previously
right.
subdivided and served by water. And Area 2, because they have a mobile home park and are considering a fairly large development, that those might be the two areas we'd like to have more interface with the county. I would guess I would put it that way. If they're going to be putting something in, we'd like to be weighing in on those regularly, even though they're supposed to negotiate with us, and Phil says they do. This would give us a little more weight to have something to say about it. And if it's something we can serve, we may want to consider it in our sphere of influence. We just don't know that yet.
I'll chime in.
Councilmember Newsom.
Sorry. I think that I need more information. Being the newer person to the city and trying to understand the dynamics of our community, I look at the maps that have been provided to us on the study areas and seem like I don't have enough information. I really want to understand maybe all four areas are of interest to us. I don't want to limit to ourselves. And in order to make a decision on my part, I need more information.
And so I think what I'm hearing is we all need more information, and that's what this process is about. And so if maybe you could, again, just very briefly, if we were to select all of these areas, 1, 2, 3, and stick with 4, we're not saying that tonight we're voting on we want these in our sphere of influence. We're saying we want this as part of the study area. Correct?
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And so as part of that study area, you're then going to come back with information, and then we may decide that there are areas of interest that we want in the MOA. We may decide that there are spheres of influence, and that could be also area of interest that's in the MOA or not. And so that information will come back to us to be able to make a decision. Tonight, we're simply saying, you know what, 1, 2, 3, and 4, yes, let's study and see what makes sense for Atascadero to consider in this process.
And what we'll do is we'll come back with a 1, 2, and 2, 3, 4 report about just study areas. And that'll be part of what comes back. And we're able to actually put on the table and say more details, more information for decision makers. Because if you need more information, the public needs more information.
Yes.
So. We can come back with around these maps, just a more detailed look at them. It may not bore down as deep as you like, but we'll get more detail for you about those particular areas. I do, off the top of having done this the last couple, I do think 2 and 3 lend itself towards being embedded in the MOA with some special provisions about how to deal with 2 and 3. That would probably be the likely outcome, but let's get you some more information. It's not hard to pull together, and we can certainly do that.
Okay. Councilmember Funk.
A question as to whether is there a reason that a study area north of the city was not considered?
North of the city?
Yeah.
You mean the Templeton CSD area?
Yeah, well, up to, say, Vineyard, you know.
Yeah, most of it's in Templeton, mm-hmm. I think, in the CSD there. So we view that as an area that's already being served by the... In fact, that little loop, I think, is in their sphere of influence. That little...
Okay.
Northern end there, just across from the fire. But because it's in the Templeton CSD, we try and keep the boundaries separate.
Okay.
We're not trying to do a hostile takeover of Templeton or anything. Okay. So I want to ask, and maybe this is a Laura question, is this something where we're just kind of giving feedback and a general agreement? Do we need to take a roll call vote, a voice vote, no vote at all?
No votes needed. This is really just a review and provide feedback.
Okay. So I think if I can encapsulate, you actually did that quite well. Is let's look at these four areas in terms of a study with the likelihood that it would be, you know, 2 and 3 would be the most likely for an MOA, whether it's SOI or not, we don't know. But let's look at those four areas, the three new ones specifically, and see what we come back with, and that will come to us with more information to then move forward.
We can do that.
Any other input?
Just I'm sorry, you may have said it, but what would be the time frame for that to occur? Did you say September, or is it a much longer time frame than that?
No, I would view that just the information about the four areas coming back fairly quickly. Mike and I will sit down and map it out, but that's not hard information to gather and put together. It's a matter of workload, so we can move things around a little bit and get working on that and work with Phil, maybe get another item on your agenda here soon. I don't know how soon, but relatively.
Okay, but I mean, we're not talking we'll see you in a year kind of thing.
How about we'll see you in a month?
Let me ask the city manager. I don't know that our time frame right now allows for that, but if the city manager would like to give some input.
You do have a lot of big items coming before you in the month of May and June. I'm sorry, we're going to have some late nights between budgets and our annual fee updates, wastewater fees, Del Rio specific plan. There's a lot coming forward. but we will work with LAFCO and David and Mike and try and get it to you as quickly as we can that fits within the rest of what's coming before you.
Great. And is there anything that we've given direction on that, you know, you've been around a long time and very experienced in this, if there's something that you have to say?
No, I think you guys have touched on a lot of different areas. They've heard some of your concerns regarding some of the, you know, sewer service, higher density housing, fire severity. The beauty of these council meetings is that they are recorded, so we can go back and listen again to make sure we didn't miss anything in either my notes or their notes. But I think I feel like I have some good direction. Is there anything you need, Mr. Church?
No, I mean, you put a lot of issues on the table for us to look at, so that's good, and we'll go back and look at them. And Mike informed me he could have it back in about 2 weeks. Oh, not 2 weeks. That was about a month or so. We can actually get you more information.
Well, he says he could have it in 2 weeks if only we were ready for it.
True enough.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. And let's move on to C3, which is our amendment to the contract between the City Council of the City of Atascadero and the Board of Administration of the California Public Employee Retirement System. And this will be our Deputy City Manager, Laura Christensen.
Thank you. I'm going to get the clicker back here. 1 second. Thank you. So the council previously approved a memorandum of understanding with the Atascadero Firefighters Association. And in that memorandum of understanding, and what was approved effective June 22nd, 2019, the employees covered under that memorandum of understanding will receive a 4.05% salary increase. And also part of that MOU was that they will pay an additional 3% towards their retirement. In order to effectuate that, CalPERS requires there to be an amendment to the agreement that the city has with them for the retirement coverage. So what happens with this amendment, if it's approved by council, is that Classic Fire members will pay 3% of the employee cost sharing towards the city's CalPERS retirement rate, and that's our Tier 1 and Tier 2 employees. Since Tier 3 employees are under CalPEPRA, that's different for them. The way that the CalPERS amendment, this is all structured by CalPERS and their requirement, it's a multi-step process. So tonight we're in step one and step two, where we need to adopt the resolution of intention, where council is saying that they intend to approve this amendment, where they intend to amend the agreement with CalPERS, and then we introduce an ordinance for first reading. After that, once the ordinance has been introduced, we can start a secret ballot election for all of the affected Atascadero Firefighters Association members. That election will run April 27th through May 3rd. Those secret ballot results will be tallied, and it's on a protest vote. So if we don't have a protest vote, then we'll come forward on May 14th with a final reading and adoption of the ordinance, and then that will change our, we send that over to CalPERS, and then they'll process the amendment to change the retirement coverage. There's really no fiscal impact, since the affected Atascadero Firefighters Associates members will pay a larger share of the pension costs. The recommendation, we'll have to do this in two motions. The first motion would be to adopt the draft resolution of intention to approve an amendment of the contract with CalPERS. And then following that, we'll need to do a motion to introduce for first reading by title only the draft ordinance authorizing the mayor to execute that amendment with CalPERS. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Laura. And so this is coming out of our two-year agreement last year with the firefighters union.
Yes, this is that memorandum.
Right. So our memorandum of understanding went from for the years 18-19 and 19-20, and so this is a follow-up to that. We're not really at liberty to make changes to what we're looking at tonight. This is simply ratifying what we've already decided, in essence.
In essence, yeah. So this has already been approved between the city and the union, so this moves forward. This is just the process that CalPERS requires in order to have that amendment with CalPERS.
So an administrative
move. This is, yes.
Move. Thank you. Do we have any council questions? Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
I did, and then through this process, so we're not actually adopting this until after the election by the members of the bargaining unit. And presumably, since it was part of the MOA, that's not a problem. But in the unlikely event that the members of the bargaining unit were for some reason not to approve it, what would that do to the process?
In either case, whether if the members of the Firefighters Association do not, or they have a protest vote where they don't pass it, this would still continue. So they will still have a 3% contribution into the city's portion of CalPERS, and with the offsetting increase in salary, it just won't give them a tax benefit, and it won't register as an employee contribution. It will register as an employer contribution to CalPERS. So it still occurs, it just isn't to their maximum benefit.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public. Any member of the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, we will close public comment, bring it back to the council for a motion.
I'll move that we adopt the draft resolution of intention to approve this amendment to our contract with CalPERS and to introduce by first reading title only the draft ordinance.
Second? Anyone?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by, was that Susan? Yeah. Councilmember Funk.
So and I actually need two separate motions.
Oh, he can't do it all at once?
No, we need to do it two separately for
the process. So that was for number one.
Yeah, I'll move that we adopt the draft resolution.
Of intention. Okay, so first by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, second by Councilmember Funk. Do you need to read anything? Or
not for this one, for the second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Now I will entertain a motion for the second.
I'll move that we introduce for first reading by title only the draft ordinance amending our contract with PERS.
I'll second it.
A motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
So now I'll read the title
yes.
of the ordinance. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, to approve an amendment to contract between the Board of Administration of the California Public Employees Retirement System and the City Council of the City of Atascadero. Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now we're on to, actually, maybe we take a quick little break, maybe 5 minutes, stretch our legs, get any amenities that we might need in the interim. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I get stuck in one position there.
So we will call the meeting back to order. And this is item C3, the Santa Lucia Road Pavement Rehabilitation Construction Award. And this will be, I'm assuming, I don't have it in front of me, but our Public Works Director, Nick DeBar. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. Tonight's item here is on Santa Lucia. It's the section between Portola and Ardea. And there's a map right there showing that section. It's about 0.85. Oh, geez, don't tell me this is going to do this the whole time. Okay, I'm just going to try. I promised our city manager I'd make this quick. I'm not sure if this is going to make it quicker. Anyways, this section is about 0.85 miles. It's classified as minor arterial collector. It has an ADT, average daily traffic of 3,750 near Ardea to 2,400 vehicles near Portola. It first appeared on the 2013-2015 budget capital improvement program. The last pavement surface treatment was performed in 2003. It was a Cape Seal. It's a surface treatment. Those Cape Seals are normally meant to last, ideally, 6 to 10 years. So you can see this is long beyond. And part of the reason the pavement has deteriorated so terribly has just been the last several heavy winter rains and just really the sustained traffic loading. And the PCI in 2014 was 43. Design analysis, really there's the work planned is pavement rehabilitation at failed locations that include digouts and paveback, so this is full depth removal and replacements, and then mill and overlay on the entire roadway section. And then it also includes drainage work, eliminating the surface ponding, so improving, getting positive cross slopes and longitudinal grading, adding edge berms to help convey that water on the edge, and then replacing some of the aged and dilapidated culverts. So the project was publicly bid. Bids opened April 10th. We received six bids ranging from $720,527 to $963,486. The lowest responsive bidder was Sousa Engineering Contracting at that low bid. And we reviewed all the bid unit pricing and everything else, and the bids are considered favorable and reasonable for the work planned. So the reason we're usually this would maybe be on consent, but we decided to make it a staff report just because of the unusualness of a bit of the funding shortfall on it. The proposed expenditures there on the top part of this table. So far, we've had about $80,000 in consulting cost, surveying, engineering design, land surveying, construction contract, a little over $720,000. We expect about 13% of the cost, construction cost, or $95,000 during construction for testing, inspection, land surveying, monuments and preservation, things like that. And then normally we have a 20% contingency. We feel 15 is adequate for this just because of the nature of the work. Usually excavating and those types of things, you uncover things you can't see when you survey. This is going to have limited on those digouts and pavebacks. That's not on the entire portion of the roadway, just at failed locations. So we feel pretty comfortable reducing that to a 15% contingency. So all in all, we're looking at potentially just over $1 million. So what was budgeted was 580, which was well short of that. So this is a local transportation funded project. We're looking at utilizing or proposing to utilize LTF fund reserves. So we looked and identified some future projects that we could maybe perhaps delay or find other funding sources for. And this is just a page out of the the last CIP in the budget. But the boxed area there, San Gabriel Road Rehabilitation and San Marcos Road Rehabilitation, are planned for construction in 2022. These were both anticipated to be LTF-funded projects. And these roadways are pretty in pretty bad shape right now, so delaying those won't make them any worse. It won't, you know, other than filling potholes for another year or so, will be the only additional cost. So what's going to be needed on that won't change, you know, if we delay those projects for a year or two. And those combined costs for those are $780,000, which will, you know, more than make up for that $425,000 shortfall. So the recommendation tonight is to award a construction contract for $720,527 to Sousa Engineering Contracting for the Santa Lucia Road Pavement Rehabilitation Project, and then also authorize the city manager to execute that contract with Sousa for said amount. And then also I authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate an additional $425,000 LTF fund balance towards the project, and then authorize the Director of Public Works to file a notice of completion with the county upon satisfactory completion of the project. So with that, I can take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Director. Good report. I will look to the lights. Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. And Nick, in the report, it talked about some asphalt berms that would be constructed at various locations to deter roadway edge deterioration. Are these actually fairly high, or this? Can you tell me what this is?
Sure. So it's usually in areas that you have a cut slope next to the roadway, and it's to kind of retain some of that material from falling onto the road and kind of covering up the edge, or you know, it acts like a gutter, so it's basically an asphalt berm or dike, and it's usually, you know, 6 inches high, a vertical one. In areas where you don't have that cut slope and maybe you have a fill slope, it might not be a full berm, but it might be something more narrow. Or at driveway approaches, sometimes we have kind of a surmountable type of a berm or dike that cars can drive over.
So it wouldn't be a full curb that I've seen.
No,
asphalt curbs.
Yeah, it would be an asphalt dike that's 6 inches tall. It's a barrier, so you can't really drive over it at all. So it's usually along this road, and I'm sure a lot of you drive it on a regular basis, but when the water has cross slope and it runs alongside of the edge of the road, like going up, you know, closer to Portola in particular, you can see the edge of the road is all scoured out, mm-hmm. and has kind of deep caverns. Yes. That we need to come in there and keep filling back up, and it kind of washes the roads out and affects the base.
So will this increase the liability with bike riders or anything like that?
No, I don't believe it will. In fact, and if anything, it'll, you know, if those bikes get off that road and get in those revlets and stuff, it might, I would rather hit that curb than go into one of those.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Hi. Briefly, I just want to applaud the staff for coordinating closely with AUSD, as I understand you've done, to manage this with respect to the very heavy school traffic that's also on that route, and ask, Santa Lucia is also a heavy an important artery for fire safety evacuation for quite an extensive neighborhood. Has consideration been given to how to manage that since when the school is out, fire is in?
Sure. So I might just add, which I forgot to add, the contractor is required to complete this work between June 7th and August 14th. So this will happen, you know, after school gets out and before it gets back on. One of the things is we don't plan on closing the entire road down. So we'll probably do, you know, maybe one lane will be closed at times, but cars can still get through, so flag people. We'll still have to figure that out. Appropriate detours will be provided if the road does need to be closed. For instance, if we're replacing some of the cross culverts or something like that. So we'll make sure to notify dispatch and work closely with the PD and fire department to make sure that they are aware of any closures.
Director, could you go back to the slide that shows the CIP? And we're looking at those two roads, so San Gabriel and San Marcos. When we did this five-year capital plan, my recollection was that SB1 was not in the mix at the time. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
Okay.
Yes. It was just coming out. There might have been none of these projects beyond really those two fiscal years that are included in the budget have funding identified for them. So we kind of, I work with the administrative services director to kind of, we project kind of what fund reserves are, and then we kind of identify projects that we can accomplish with those funds. So that's like tonight earlier in consent, there was a SB1 list of project for the El Camino South project that we identified to be used for those funds, which we need to do that each year through a resolution. It's not, I don't like annoying the council with those resolutions and coming back, but that's something that the Transportation Commission requires for our reporting, and then we have to attach a resolution when we identify that.
So what I'm wondering is, in the staff report, we had said there's, you know, probably other monies such as SB1 that could be used for San Gabriel and San Marcos. Do we have any sort of an estimate as to, you know, could we still, is it likely that these two roads could still get done in that 22 time frame based on other funding that will be available, or is it really an unknown and it could be pushed out a year or two?
You know, I really, they could possibly be still kept on track for that 2022. It's a lot of it has to do with cash flow and, you know, paying the bills and making sure you keep that reserve that, you know, that the administrative services director is comfortable with in each of those funds. You know, you had El Camino South on this project list as well. So, you know, it's quite possible. And currently I'm actually updating all that this week and hope to get a final draft to the administrative services director this week. So we'll know more, and I think the finance committee will be reviewing that in the next couple weeks. Is that correct, Director Engel?
Yes, that will come before the finance committee in May.
Thank you. Do we have any other council questions before we go to public comment? Seeing none, I will open it up to public, and go ahead and come forward to the podium and state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes. And I understand you have a presentation for us.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, good evening. My name is Marcel Schade, and I am a Tascadero resident, live on Encino Avenue, and I have some comments regarding the Santa Lucia Road Improvement Project. And following the slides here, I'm not sure if this is, oh, there we go. So Santa Lucia has a total of 7 intersections, 4 of which are with city-maintained roads, 3 of which with privately maintained public roads. And going through these step by step and requesting additional improvements for a total of 3 of them. So the first is with Navarette. That's a city-maintained public road and will be also rehabilitated this summer under Measure F14. So there will be a continuous roadway connecting the road back to the San Andres and San Marcos intersection. Venado Avenue has some minor improvements. There's, I think, an ADA-compliant ramp that will be replaced there at the intersection, but the roadway in general appears to be in very good condition. That you can see here, the improvement will be right there at the stop sign lettering. Then the intersection with Violetta Avenue shows very severe, and I'm just flying through this because of the limited time, severe erosion, as you can see here in the next pictures. There's silt, stone, rocks, road break-off accumulating towards the bottom. Further uphill, there's the AC dike to the right, improved with some sandbags there currently, and on the left side you see severe washouts. So my request is for this intersection to be further improved uphill Violetta Avenue if remaining funds are available towards the completion, towards the end of the completion of the project. Then the next intersection is with St. Andrews Avenue that will actually be improved fairly far into the avenue and will connect there at the bottom to the roadway that was rehabilitated, I think, in 2017 and, or 18. And the only request I have there is there's a really old wooden guardrail that is looking very rotten and severely eroded there at the foundation, that could be replaced as a safety issue or safety measure at this intersection. Then the St. Andrews improvement actually here at the intersection with at Retiro Road was rehabilitated some 35 or 40 feet into the roadway. That just as comparison, that it is possible to pull this further in, I guess, if funds remain available. And then the next intersection is with Quarter Avenue, has a very driveway, extended driveway character, and there's really no need, I guess, to further improve that in. But now to my main request at the intersection there with, where is it, Choplin Avenue and... I hope I can speak.
Go ahead and finish Choplin. Yes.
Okay. So Choplin is privately maintained also, but it carries a fair amount of highway traffic. This current surface is severely eroded, and especially at the intersection there with Santa Lucia is a sinkhole forming that I think is currently just out of the scope of rehabilitation. This intersection is somewhat special because there's the old original easement wrapping around a creek, and that little dirt road is currently used as overflow parking, crew rest and staging area, and as a wild U-turn loop. And because of that nature, there's always sand and gravel and silt carried into the roadway, both on Encino and Santa Lucia Avenues. At this intersection also, there's a culvert that undergoes Santa Lucia that is scheduled to be replaced as part of the project scope. And my request here is to extend the rehabilitation 100 feet or whatever is feasible into Choplin and add also some additional AC and type E HME dikes as shown here on the next pictures. Currently, this will be addressed as part of the rehabilitation. This is just a picture of what the rains during this winter season resulted in terms of puddle forming. The dike here will also be replaced approximately as far in as to the pole. But you can see here on the right side, there's a lot of washout silt that's carried into the roadway. And there on the left is the pothole forming that I was mentioning earlier. Additional pictures just of the washout, just because there's an undefined edge on Choplin.
I think what would help is probably if you left the pictures for staff.
Sure.
There are a lot of streets around Atascadero that have some similar looks to them. But what I'm hearing from you is your main request has to do with Choplin and if there can be some extension done, which will address one of the closed public comment.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
So not only Choplin, but also Encino, because and I just wanted to share that as a neighborhood planning to improve this road this summer, and if there was a possibility to define an edge that we could basically connect to, that would be highly appreciated as well. Because currently,
thank you.
This is what it looks like currently. So,
okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
And thank you for your patience tonight. You and making the assumption that's your daughter stayed here patiently all night through the whole thing. So thank you, and very good natured, and she has quite the positive attitude. This is amazing. Trying to imagine my niece and nephew sitting through all of this, and I'm not seeing it. So wonderful. Is there anyone else from the public wishing to speak right now? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council and to staff. I will say it is challenging. There are probably dozens of other roads where people could come and show us the issues. I have a few on my list, but they're not being taken care of, just so you know. I don't have a list that gets taken care of. Got to be careful what I say. But it is a challenge, and we are certainly doing the best we can with the pavement condition index, looking at that, looking at our pavement management index. I would just ask the Public Works Director, for you, I think you and Marcel have connected. Is there anything that you wanted to bring to our attention that we might be having questions in our mind about those, specifically Choplin and maybe Encino.
Well, first of all, I mean, I should probably hire him to do my PowerPoint presentations. My gosh. He did a great job, Mr. Schott. And, you know, we've spoken before, obviously. And a couple of these, like Violetta, is that the only city-maintained road that he has mentioned? He's making a request to extend it out a little bit. Maybe I'll just, I've actually got control of the slides. He's got better pictures than I do. We are actually cutting back. And most of these, when we do these projects, for instance, we end up like wrapping that back around. Like this is a screenshot of actually our plans that we provided them, and we usually wrap those around enough where we can actually paint on a nice pavement marking or smooth surfaces. We can paint that stop legend and the stop bar. So a lot of times we wrap around, and then also if Violetta ever were to get done, that we wouldn't be out causing, you know, any kind of traffic impacts to Santa Lucia. So we try to wrap those around enough. In this case, there's a, believe it or not, this is kind of behind St. Williams. There's a sidewalk on the right side of this. There's a ADA ramp that we need to replace. So that's why we're actually going back a little further. But
So Violetta is part of the plan. When you do San Lucia, you would go up far enough that it would, according to this picture here, far enough that it would, like you said, in the future, one, you can have more of a smooth transition from Santa Lucia to Violetta, but also in the future, if you were ever to do that street, you're not working out into Santa Lucia. So that is on the plan.
Correct. So the shaded area in this picture actually shows the extents that we're planning to go. Mr. Schott was requesting we go up a little further just because, you know, like you mentioned, Mayor Moreno, there's a lot of terrible roads in town, and, you know, where do we stop on a lot of these? A lot of these drainage issues will also be corrected. A few of these things you had mentioned, you know, having a defined drainage edge through these intersecting roads. We can certainly work with the contractor on those things. Choplin and Encino are actually a non-maintained road, so we try not to go too far up on that. This particular one, this is Choplin, correct, I believe? And that drainage way, we're reconstructing the way the water gets off the road. There's a culvert underneath this picture of where he's standing, and that's going to be replaced as well. So we're taking care of a lot of these, you know, ponding issues and drainage issues as well.
So there's some of the issues that are happening on non-city maintained roads, but because of the work we're doing on Santa Lucia and some of the drainage issues that we will be correcting, it will positively affect those other streets.
Absolutely. Yep. And we tie back to make a nice smooth transition as well as, you know, make sure that we have good surfacing to put those legends on the pavement. Let me see. I think the other one was the little guardrail or that fencing around. That's not a bridge there. That's just a culvert. And it looked to me like it was mostly with fencing related to the neighboring fencing.
Yeah, so I think you said it was the guardrails on San Andres. San Andres. Wondering right there. Go back. Is there a safety issue there, or is it more of an aesthetic issue?
I don't see that as a safety issue so much. You have a curb there in front to kind of warn cars, and that delineator, the black and yellow delineator right in front. You know, this isn't a bridge, so, you know, it's just a culvert crossing there. You know, we included this section of San Andres. We stopped where that shaded area stops with the project a couple years ago, and so we're going to get that covered as well. But, you know, from a management standpoint, too, when we do the pavement management indexing and inventory and everything else, we try to go, you know, each segment is intersection to intersection, so it's harder to kind of, when we stop, you know, 100 feet off from the intersection, it's a little harder to manage and inventory and kind of track and everything. But, you know, I would recommend we kind of stick with the plans that we have. You know, we'll work on making sure that those drainage ways with the intersecting roads with the contractor, make sure that we have good positive drainage that goes across and doesn't flood out. And, you know, if Mr. Schott sees anything out there, I'll give him my card and he can give me a call personally.
Thank you, Director. Bringing it then back to Council for comments, questions, a motion, and I see your Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Well, between the two of you, I think you mostly answered my question, which is simply that if, you know, we're not going to go up farther and farther into maintaining non-city-maintained roads, but things that happen on the road, washing stuff out into our city-maintained roadway, causing it to fall apart sooner than expected, that's what I got out of this, is that, you know, that's a possibility, and it sounds like you're already taking that into consideration, you know, with, you know, if water's coming off the non-city-maintained road, you're going to take care of that. And so I don't know if that's been taken care of in all of these intersections, but, I mean, that's the basic gist, is that we ensure that we're, you know, preventing the future damage to the city-maintained portion. And
absolutely. Yeah, we want to provide positive drainage off the roads. And, you know, these bid pricing that we have from the contractor, there's probably, like, I don't know, 50 unit price individual items. And it provides a little flexibility. So if we need to go up a little further and transition a little bit more, we can. You know, we try to stick to the plan as much as possible. But sometimes when you get out there in the field, you find, wow, right, this pavement is like, we got to get back to a nice, good edge to match up to. So sometimes they do go back, but not hundreds of feet typically.
Yeah. Understand. But if you spot some opportunities for cheap improvements, could you, I don't know if you could even use contingency money to cover some of that. But just when, you know, we get the biggest bang for the buck,
yep,
while not going too much beyond what we already
have. Yeah, we're very involved in the construction, and you know, any of that extra work will have to be directed by staff and approved by staff.
Right. Thank you.
If we don't have any other questions or comments, I'd be looking for a motion.
I'll move that we adopt recommendations 1 through 4 in the staff report.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
We'll move on to council announcements and committee reports. We'll combine those together, and I will go from my left to my right.
To look back at my notes. The Tascadero Design Review Committee met on April 10th. We had a productive meeting. We heard 4 different projects. A new building is proposed next to Brew Coffee House. Cell tower expansion will happen in accordance with the building of La Plaza. Holiday Inn is looking at putting solar panels on carports. And it was just a very interesting meeting. If any of the public wants to join us, we have another one scheduled in May. The April 24th one has been canceled. My other committees, I don't have anything to report. I will report that I did go to Colony Deli and then am in love with their sandwiches.
Okay. I attended the Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting on April 10th, and at that meeting we did approve the hiring of a new general manager who has accepted the position, named Mr. Brooks Steyer, who was most recently employed in Merced County and has been in the waste management field for many years, and seems like a very good hire, and the board unanimously approved that selection. So that's the significant thing there. And then this Thursday, we will be having our second Finance Committee meeting regarding the 2019 to 2021 city budget. So folks are welcome to that. I believe it's in room 306 again at 4 o'clock. So, and that's it.
I had the mayor's meeting, nothing particular to report from that. Had an update from some of the members that are on the committee with regards to the Diablo closure, former Supervisor Frank Meacham, another gentleman there, but just you know, seeing if there's any information that councils want, and we said, you know, certainly feel free to come and give us a presentation if that is of interest to the council, and if it is, we can ask them to do that. But really nothing that I saw of major concern and nothing that's not already out there that we can look for individually. Regarding the issue of the city clerk's office, the county clerk recording office closing their Atascadero location, that did come as quite a surprise to us in about a week or so ago. And I think several of us have been approached. Not only do we know from a city that it would be a tremendous burden, but from many residents and business owners, because it is of the essence. Unfortunately, we don't have time to agendize it next time and then write a letter together, so I will let my colleagues know that I have already written a letter in strong opposition, sent it to all five Board of Supervisor members, and actually probably need to send that to Tommy Gong's office as well, and would just encourage my colleagues, if you want to individually write something as well, depending on where you stand on that issue. I realize we can't talk about that, but I know that would be important to our business community and residents, because it really affects, at any point in time, it could affect almost everybody in this city, depending on and what kind of business we might have. So. Let's see. Just good news. I heard from Supervisor Arnold that the HEAP funds of $1.5 million were awarded to the Paso Robles Echo combined project, so that is good news. And then I went to a meeting this morning of the Downtown Business Improvement District, and they have so much energy and momentum, which is fantastic. They had been planning a block party, and because I think they're kind of getting out ahead of it, and it was requiring a lot, they haven't had the time needed to actually put on the kind of event that they wanted. So that May 4th block party has been canceled, and I just wanted to let folks know that, because if you're planning on going, I didn't want you to go downtown and be disappointed. I would still like you to go downtown, because I don't think you'll be disappointed, but the block party won't be happening. They will schedule that again in the future, but they are excited. They'll be getting the first assessment coming to them probably sometime by mid-July, and have a lot of plans to continue with some of the really fantastic events that they've been doing.
I will ask the city attorney to pull me back if I'm asking the wrong thing about the county clerk's office closing, but if we're sending a letter, are we stating that if they can only keep it open a couple days a week, we would be happy to have that in place of closing, although we prefer it 5 days a week?
I can tell you that my letter said that even if you had it open 2 to 3 days a week, that would be helpful, and possibly on those days you may have to modify services in San Luis Obispo.
Very good. Thank you.
So is the discussion then, one of you is the mayor going to send a letter? Or?
I've already sent a letter, okay. And just if my colleagues would like to also send letters,
they're certainly free to do that.
They're free to do that.
Very good. In terms of reports, I did have LAFCO. I think you heard what we talked about, which was spheres of influence. Otherwise, no report.
And my items mostly have been covered. I did send a letter in support of our application, the City of Paso and ECHO application that was approved today. The Finance Committee coming up. Staff, could you alert any interested members of the public the subject matter of our next meeting on Thursday, and then we'll pick up again in May with some other meetings?
Certainly. We will be covering budget items that we call them other funds that are outside of debt service. They're not capital. They're not general funds, so they're kind of in that everything else category. So there's probably assessment districts and some of the downtown benefit assessment district, those kinds of funds are in that grouping.
Okay, thank you. I believe all the members of the council have received communication from the League of California Cities. The next meeting is being hosted in Paso Robles, and I hope that you have RSVP'd if you haven't already and are able to come. It's an excellent opportunity, and it'd be nice for us to support folks coming up here to North County and understanding what we offer. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't see any individual determinations or announcements, so I believe we are adjourned.